what football folk is doing. Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
Hey, as a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PFF.
Do you not understand that they are that way because you're Joe Flacco?
And you just like to discredit things that people deserve credit for.
That you can't possibly be expected to defend that.
Talk about the game, Sam.
So,
who cares about what people think about us?
Yeah, I like football. I like football season and all the things that go with it.
Welcome into the PFF NFL podcast. Steve Pelizzolo back here with Sam Monson. And we're getting ready to fix your team in 5 minutes if you're in the NFC North or the NFC West. But first, breaking news yesterday. A lot of NFL news happening yesterday. A lot of important NFL news. They're cramming all the news into 2 days.
Yeah.
The great Alejandro Villanueva has retired.
The great.
Yeah. And we'll have a tribute video.
Mm-hmm.
We have a tribute to the great Alejandro at the end of the show. You're going to want to stick around for that. If you're on YouTube, you're going to want to stick around. If you're listening on audio, you're going to have to go to YouTube.
Or that we'll tweet it out as well.
It'll come through social media as well. But look, I've only poured one out for one person. That's Joe Thomas on this show.
I mean, about
and,
the same.
And I did it because of the old studio. There was like a carpet and it was kind of trash. So I just dumped some water out there.
Yeah.
I would pour one out for Villanueva, but we're kind of in like a nice studio. There's a lot of electric around here. You know.
And Ash Brock's back there.
He'll come
at you with a fork or something from the studio.
We won't pour one out for him on the show. We'll just give him the tribute video. So that happened yesterday.
Yeah.
He will not be letting any offensive line creep back toward average next year.
No. He's done. He's out of here.
And
8-year career, something like that.
Yeah. It's a good career.
Yeah. Solid career.
Wide receiver turns defensive end.
That's the thing they say, right? When you're drafting these guys, 10-year starter. That's what you're shooting for.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't make it to 10.
He almost made it.
8 years. When you consider he was a wide receiver back in the day, that's pretty good going.
He started his NFL career with the Eagles as a defensive end.
Yeah.
And look at him. A true hero for tall men and Americans.
For tall men.
Yeah. What was I going to say? Oh, I'm on to Morgan Moses. Yeah. Somebody pointed it out yesterday, but I'm on to Morgan Moses. If that guy retires, I'm in trouble.
Yeah.
Morgan's going to help every offensive line creep back toward average this year. So I had to find my next great player.
Okay.
It's going to be weird. The Hall of Fame induction, you got Tom Brady, you got Big Ben, you got Villanueva. I mean, they're all going to go in the same year. It's going to be pretty crowded there.
Yeah. I'm not 100% sure that Ali's going to make the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, maybe not first ballot, but
we'll
see what happens.
Yeah.
Anyway, we got a great show today. We didn't get to remind everybody about the charities.
Yeah, well, so
we were trying to keep it tight.
Because I was ill. Still am. But I've reached the point now where I've reached the recovery stage where along the way, your voice drops like 3 octaves.
Yeah.
So it's going to be lower today. But it also means I can knock out like a mean acapella, you know?
Are you going to? I mean, you
want me to break
you've sung
Amazing
on the show.
Grace?
Yeah. Do Amazing Grace, really.
Amazing Grace.
We get a solo game.
How sweet the sound.
That's
pretty
good.
Low, right?
Yeah.
Way lower than it's normally.
We'll get you in church this weekend, rocking it.
So, you were about to hit the charity thing, right?
We're moving now. We're moving.
Oh, yeah?
In the right direction. Let me go check.
What are you up to?
I'm just getting the email updates.
So, not to poison the well here, but look at that. 460. Okay.
It's better.
So, it's stalled out a little bit. And I want to give people a taste of what we can expect, right? So, I bought my Chief starter jacket thing here, right? So this is what will be, it's part of the outfit.
This is not fair. You can't market yourself here.
Oh, I can. I gotta, like, that's up. Right. Tyler, here we go, right? This is part of the outfit. But here's the real majesty, right? Because we're going to repurpose the wig that we use for the Steve thing, right? Now, if you put it on this way, it's a Steve wig, right? Where the flows down the back here.
Sure, yeah.
But I've discovered that if you flip it backwards, it's Jackson Mahomes, right?
Wow.
Where it all goes up here.
Yeah.
Yeah? So we hit that.
All right, I'm donating right now, too. I'm going to donate to
Sam's
cause.
Here, look. Here we go.
It's perfect.
That's impressive. Can you make that?
Now I just need a chain and then a dance, right? But that's what we're doing.
I think we need to fly you to Arrowhead to do this too. This has to be on the field.
Yeah, you think they're going to be good with that?
Your little blocked off section. Yeah.
So anyway, right? I will be dressed like that with a chain, and then I have to learn how to do a TikTok dance. So look, if that doesn't get you donating to raise money for charity for kids suffering from cancer, I don't know.
How am I going to outmarket this? Should I, am I allowed to get my the Heritage House manager on to?
I'm not sure you understand
explain the program
here,
in a minute.
Right?
No, because that's because we're trying to appeal.
What you need to do is
to
have
people.
A video of you like trying to run right now, and illustrate.
But,
how
but there's two things you're
be.
Trying to. True. I mean, I did the cone on the draft show last year, day three.
True.
Remember that?
Yeah, we could pull that up.
I mean,
we don't have it now, but we could.
I did the shuttle.
Yeah. That's the kind of thing. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. So let's fire up the shuttle from
you need
beyond
to find
day
a
three.
Picture of you like trying to grab a basketball rim, and then
what would my vertical be right now?
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, my vertical's in the teens.
I need to help you market this. That's how you do it.
Can you believe my vertical was once 32?
No, having seen you try and jump, I can't.
And that was I was using the combine tricks you learned. You're supposed to like. You got to retract your scapula for your arm length stuff. I mean, there's tricks to it.
Yeah.
So with tricks, 32.
Do you think that accidentally Aiden Hutchinson did the tricks and that's why he's got...
Well, no, you don't want to do it when they're doing your arm length.
That's what I mean. Do you think
wanna,
he accidentally did it by mistake?
You want to loosen your, well,
that's what
your scapula.
Yeah. Did he do it by mistake? An error?
He may have. He may have not been properly informed in how you're supposed to control your scapula during arm length versus vertical jump. Anyway... I'm trying to appeal to the people two different ways, right? Look at big goofy me doing combine drills and all that stuff, but also look at the cause and having someone explain the cause and how his whole life was changed and how we're helping people
just from personal
in addiction recovery here in Cincinnati.
Just from personal experience, I think that the much larger motivating factor is people wanting to see us look like idiots.
Yeah, that's probably true. All right, see what we can do. But, hey, we appreciate a lot more donations these last couple of days. Somebody said leave the – talk out the link, right? What is
the link?
Go to GoFundMe and search PFF NFL Podcast.
Or, there's a bunch of different ways. We will try and make sure that it goes into each YouTube description so you'll find it. It's also always our pinned tweets.
Always
so
our pinned
go to Twitter,
tweet.
At PFF underscore Sam or at PFF underscore Steve. It's always the pinned tweet. It's the top tweet on each one of those. So you
but
can
for
always
people,
find it there.
For people listening, GoFundMe, PFF NFL Podcast, Steve. Just search that. It'll take you right there. Or my pinned tweet. It'll get there as well. Titans are releasing Roger Saffold. Breaking news at the moment.
Okay.
We'll hit that later. There's going to be a lot of other news
Roger.
We're not going to be able to touch on here. Anyway, again, appreciate everybody for donating and being a part of another big charity drive here in the PFF NFL Podcast. Want to get into the action here?
Our PR guy David Zolfaro was asking me when we're going to do the pitching one. He's jacked for that one. He wants it to happen.
I think I appreciate the University of Cincinnati letting us use the field. I think we should talk to the Reds.
Okay,
since Great American Ball. It's still Great American, right? Great American Ballpark is unused right now.
I can't tell you how insulted I've been by some of the numbers suggested. Somebody was like 42. I could hit 42 from this chair right now. Like 42 is ridiculous. 42 is slower than that guy that I sent you the video of, like lofting the ball like that.
You're over 42 for sure.
So okay, look, my money's on 60 plus, but the idea that it's 42 is just like it's an insult.
You're between 42 and 59.
42 is an insult, not just to me, but to my family's heritage, to Irish people in general. To humanity.
More perspective.
That's what it is.
My dad in his early 60s, horrible baseball player. He was 31 to 38, I believe, throwing the ball.
I mean, when they first said it, I wanted to be like, I could throw 42 left-handed. And then I realized that I could probably throw about 8 left-handed. I can't throw left-handed at all. So that's not a good one. But I genuinely, 42 is ridiculous. Come on.
Isn't that why when offensive linemen say it's like when moving from the left side to the right side, it's like throwing lefty?
Not if you're me. It's not. I mean,
no, it's not for anybody. Nobody can throw.
I can't even make the motion
left-handed.
Like
three people in the world can throw with both hands.
Yeah.
Three of them.
So right-sided on everything. Like when we were doing the batting practice, right? Like Rick is out there switch hitting. Is that what they call it?
Yes.
You flip one to the other.
Switch hitting.
And he was doing like two right, two left, two right. I can't even, I literally can't even make the motion left side. Yeah. I can't do it.
I rake left-handed. Hit hard. I hit the ball well.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Great.
Well, when I'm pitching 60, you can go out there as a left-handed batter.
So,
hang it over the fence.
Let's get Solfaro talking to the Reds.
The Reds.
Right. I want to go to Great American. Because this will be cool, too, because you're going to throw the gear on. I still have to pitch to you.
Yeah.
We can really, like, Steve.
I also still
I've never pitched off an NFL, I mean, a Major League Baseball mound.
Really?
Never.
Wow.
I had an opportunity. Sorry, we're not going to go off the rails here. Though I had an opportunity.
Now's the time to reel it back in.
In 2002.
I think that's already gone.
In 2002, I had a good little run with UMass Lowell on our way to the College World Series. I got elected to the annual All-Star Game where the Division I stars play the Division II and III stars.
Okay.
Always at Fenway Park. But we were stuck at the World Series. We were at the Division II World Series. So I didn't get to go play at Fenway Park. I was too busy getting lit up in the first game of the World Series.
Nice. When we do this, I also still want to take a shot at catching one of yours barehand.
That's what I mean. So you're going to, yeah, you could barehand.
Catch it with the glove,
but
I want to take a shot at
the
catching.
The Reds could give me my opportunity to finally throw my first pitch off an NFL mound.
And wow, won't they be proud
they'll be
when they see 72 so fire right over the plate.
72 miles an hour more than any other pitch that's being thrown off a Major League mound right now. That's all I'm saying.
True.
Good job, baseball.
I mean, we don't know what I'm going to top out at, but it's probably less than 72.
Dude, what if you're
I'll give you that credit.
What if you're like low 80s out of nowhere? Just low 80s.
Like, what's the...
What if you get signed?
What's that movie with like the kid who just has like a cannon for an arm? Like
what Rookie of the Year.
Just What if I'm that? Just by mistake. Nobody knew.
I always dreamed of being
unlikely.
The rookie. Sitting on my arm for 10 years and all of a sudden throwing 100.
I mean, 82 would be unlikely, but I think the bigger concern for you would be like if I roll out here and just... out of nowhere have like 70 in me. That would be unfortunate.
Yeah, that would be very unfortunate.
I mean, I'm right, who are at the optimistic end of
the
scale.
Don't bet on it.
I'm saying six, right? If I get 60, I'm giving you 14 miles an hour over me and think I can hit 60. If it's closer than that, it's a rough day to be Steve Palazzolo.
Anyway, we appreciate everybody being a part of all of this and the banter. But we're going to get into... fixing your team in the NFC North and the NFC West. You ready to go?
Yeah.
Let's start with, by the way, PFF NFL Daily. Before we start, PFF NFL Daily today, we got in-depth even more on the Carson Wentz news. I do want to get, because it's draft guide season, I do want to do the giveaway again. So email us at nflpodcast@pff.com. nflpodcast@pff.com. Back to the screenshots of PFF NFL Daily and PFF NFL Podcast. If you subscribe to both, send me a screenshot that proves it out. Email it at nflpodcast@pff.com, and I will pick a lucky winner for a free Edge subscription at pff.com. Screenshot nflpodcast@pff.com, the daily and the current show here, the PFF NFL Podcast, and that's it.
We've had a lot of people emailing so confident in my inability to hit 60 that they're willing to donate.
Yeah, because they have perspective. Is the NFC West good? That good that you're already talking about baseball? Yeah, that's it. NFC West.
I mean, already? Like,
they're just loaded.
This is what we do up front. Like, we haven't even got to the stuff yet.
We haven't gotten to the...
Yeah.
Fast forward to here for the...
Must be a new list.
For the baseball. I mean, for the football. All right, let's go. NFC North. We're starting the Chicago Bears. How are we going to fix the Chicago Bears? New regime. It's a whole new world. Matt Eberflus taking over at head coach. Ryan Poles taking over at GM. A lot of work to do with the Bears because, again, my biggest thing is since 2018, they've just gotten worse and worse and worse as a roster. But you have Justin Fields.
Yes.
So how are we going to build around Justin Fields here?
You have Justin Fields, so obviously step one, I think, is surround that guy with some talent, right? And it's both receiver and offensive line. Darnell Mooney is basically the only receiver they have. Allen Robinson looks like he's finally hitting free agency, almost certainly going somewhere else. The offensive line needs major overhaul. They've got Tevin Jenkins, who they drafted last year. We haven't really seen much from him yet. Cody Whitehair is still there. Those are basically the two guys that you can pencil in and be reasonably confident in. Everybody else needs an upgrade.
Yeah, so I think, is this another team where you just... you focus the team building efforts on one side of the ball for year one.
Yeah.
I mean, get the offensive line, get some playmakers, and go from there.
Quarterback is too important for you to sort of hedge it. You know, like supporting cast for a quarterback is everything. But some things are way more important than others, right? This was always the debate when it came to, you know, elite quarterbacks and stuff. It's like, yeah, their defense is terrible. It's like, yeah, and that's going to limit how well they can win games and, you know, go to a Super Bowl and those kinds of things. But how good a defense is doesn't really affect whether or not Justin Fields gets murdered, which is the important part, right? We have this quarterback we think has the ability to be very good and be the leader of this franchise going forward. But if we spend 3 draft picks on defensive line and cornerbacks, like, the guy's going to get buried after 7 plays because Myles Garrett is just destroying, you know, whatever tackle we put out there. Like, that can't happen. So we might have to sacrifice defense for a little bit and just hammer everything at making sure this guy's got people to throw to and enough warm bodies in front of him that he doesn't get destroyed every time he goes out there.
So I think part of the issue here, so I've said this for years, the idea of trading up for a quarterback, fine. Like, do it. Go get your guy. Last year they gave up. They don't have the number 7 overall pick this year because they went up and got Justin Fields, right? If that was for a Jamal Adams or a non-quarterback, you'd say, wow, that's crazy. Like, you gave up almost 2 top 10 picks, essentially, for one player. That's okay. But it leaves the Bears with 5 draft picks this year. First one's at 39, only 2 picks in the top 100. So every time, and I think this was the big mistake the Texans made when they traded up to get Deshaun Watson years ago. Trade up, go get Deshaun Watson, fine. But what the Texans did after that was every single move after that was bad, essentially, right? Every time they traded a Jadeveon Clowney, they didn't get enough draft capital back. Or they gave up a ton of draft capital for Laremy Tunsil, right? When you trade up for a quarterback, that risk is perfectly fine. But you have to offset that, in my opinion, with going the complete other way in the subsequent years, right? You have to add draft capital the next few years and offset what you just gave up for the quarterback. So I think my number one strategy for the Bears is something they can't really execute until draft night, which is turn that 5 picks into 8, 9, or 10. I think you have to do that if you're the Bears. And then do the same thing next year, right? If you're the Bears, to get this thing back on track, you have to draft 10 to 12 times each of the next 2 years.
Yep.
And I think you work the board as much as possible. The mistakes the Bears could make is falling in love with one player at 39 overall and saying, that's our guy, or trading up somehow for some reason to get it. Do whatever you can to draft 10 to 12 times each of the next 2 years. And that's one of the big steps to getting the nucleus in place for Justin Fields.
But they're another one of those teams, I think, that needs to be active in free agency, trying to find those viable starters on the offensive line. Now, the problem is, if you've been listening to this series, there's more of those teams, even though it's a rich area for those players, right? There's an absolute ton of these guys who are genuinely viable starting caliber offensive linemen. The problem is there's more teams that need them than there are number of guys out there. So eventually, somebody's going to be left without getting some of those. And maybe the market is stronger for those players than we think it should be. But, you know, all these players that we've been listing out, the James Daniels, Ben Jones, Austin Corbett, Andrew Norwell, Morgan Moses, Eric Fisher, Alex Kappa, Brian Allen.
Good work.
So many of them, right? All these guys should be in play for a team like Chicago, but they should also be in play, you know, for Cincinnati, for all these other teams that have holes in the offensive line. And somebody is going to end up missing out and not getting any of those deals done by the time they roll into the draft and be in a tougher situation. And that's generally speaking why there were good teams in a given year and bad teams in a given year. But my point being, like half the other teams we've been mentioning, Chicago needs to be phoning up every single one of those guys and trying to nail down 5 starting guys before you hit the draft. And if you stumble into another 1 or 2 in the draft, awesome. It's a great problem to have. But don't put yourself in the situation where your picks that begin at number 39, like, you need a starter from one of those, because that's bad.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think the draft for the Bears, it can't be, you cannot go into the draft. And again, we're doing this for all 32 teams. So it's not like my strategy for one team isn't that much different than other teams, which is why I say a lot of the same stuff, right? Because the strategy is the same. But as the Bears especially, you cannot go into the draft needing starters. right? Needing
on
to,
the offensive line,
like, particularly on the offensive line. I mean, but you can't go in and say, okay, we got to get our starting receiver here. We have to get our starting whatever. You have to only be able to take the best players because the whole roster needs help. Secondary needs help. Defensive front needs help. Offensive line, playmakers, they need help everywhere. Okay, so you can't go into the draft doing that. But the other part about the offensive line is we know Justin Fields likes to hold the ball a little bit longer. We know that he's in that group of quarterbacks that's generally going to make the offensive line look a little bit worse. But you also have an offensive line that wasn't great when they had to just pure pass protect last year. And you have to eliminate any of those excuses. I think the way the Jets tried to finally build their team 2 years ago, where they finally addressed the offensive line and got that back on track, the way the Chargers addressed the offensive line last offseason, I think that is priority number one for the Bears. Leave no excuses for Fields from a pass protection standpoint. Plus, if you get a decent run blocking unit, don't forget Fields, awesome in the run game, design run game, him and David Montgomery back there together can be really dangerous. Having a good, well-rounded offensive line, I think, should be priority number one.
Yeah, agreed. By the way, now, like, this show of all shows is the day we don't have the cough button queued up.
Because you got coughs and sneezes and,
right,
and the whole thing. It's good to have you back, though. Welcome back to the show.
Good call.
All right, so you mentioned a bunch of the free agent offensive linemen. I'm not going to get that specific in the draft because they don't have a first rounder, and I don't want them to pick at 39. Like, okay. I want them to turn 39 into a couple more top 100 picks, and that's what I want the Bears to do. I think the line is where I think you can make even just some short-term moves. You know, if the Bears brought in Dwayne Brown just for a year, because you're not going to fill every long-term roster hole this year. But if you just take a Dwayne Brown just to solidify the left tackle spot, the same way they did Jason Peters last year, bring somebody in just to get better development out of Justin Fields for this year. But I think the rest of the roster has to be a forward-looking approach. Guys that are going to be there in 23 and 24, your pass catchers. I think a receiver like a Keelan Cole, we're not going to say this is the best free agent move of all time, but he's a guy that could be a reasonable option for them over the next couple of years, a number three type of receiver. I think just continue to add those types to the team in free agency and go from there.
Yeah, and they have a decent amount of money to spend. They've got space right now. They're another one of those teams that can free up, a ton of space, and they can get somewhere in the region of $80+ million of salary cap space. So they have cash to go and hunt some of these wide receivers. And, presumably they're letting Allen Robinson walk, but maybe they get into the Michael Gallup sweepstakes if he makes it as far as free agency. It's still up in the air what Dallas is doing with their receivers. Maybe they're a team that gets involved in the Marquez Valdes-Scantling thing, which is probably going to get quite expensive.
Yeah.
All of a sudden you have Darnell Mooney and Valdes-Scantling. That's some serious speed out there at receiver, and you still have the draft upcoming to try and add. I'm going to keep coming back to Russell Gage as a guy that can do everything and be a really nice number two in any given offense. So Russell Gage paired with Mooney, that gives you a really nice foundation to add, one more guy in the draft and all of a sudden have a really good wide receiver core.
I'm torn on what they could do in the secondary too, because I agree with those moves. If they're going to spend a ton of money, I'm intrigued by Jalen Johnson's been pretty solid as a starting corner. They need somebody opposite him. Could they be looking at a guy like Carlton Davis coming out of Tampa Bay? Again, we're projecting him over $16 million a year. Is it too early in the Bears rebuild to invest that type of money? Or do you say, look, we're still in this division with Aaron Rodgers. We have to be able to cover well. We have to be able to, we have to be strong at corner. Jalen Johnson's a starting point. We're going to invest in a J.C. Jackson or Carlton Davis. Some of those guys, Tre'Davious Ward, some of those corners at the top. I think those guys should be in play for the Bears.
I just think if you're going to spend that kind of money, spend it on offense. If you have that to deploy, find a receiver, find an offensive lineman that's going to guarantee a spot that helps Justin Fields. Because that's where your offseason should be, right? Help Justin Fields. Those words. That's it. That should be Chicago's offseason.
All right. Have we fixed the Bears? We're going to focus on offense. We're going to attack free agency with the PFF free agent board, not overpaying for guys that are in the hundreds on the PFF free agent board. Be smart at receiver. I'm going to go longer term plays when it comes to the pass catchers. Personally, I would take a look at the cornerback market because I don't want to go completely on offense. And then Akeem Hicks is also a free agent. I mean, just big dudes on the interior. Not a great year for that. But if you find value in the draft on late day two into day three, and perhaps some of those low rent type of free agents, the Sebastian Joseph Days of the world, if he's at the right price, got to get those guys in there. Sound good?
Yeah.
All right, have we fixed the Bears?
Yeah, enough.
Is this a, as I find our ad reads, multi-year rebuild here for the Bears?
Yeah, I mean, at least in terms of, like, we want to focus everything on the offense for year one. Year two is when presumably you can have the flexibility to address defense once you're sure that Justin Fields is going to work out and then you have a pretty decent setup built around him. And that's when you go from being viable to being good, presumably. So, you know, you can rebuild this thing in 1 year, but to be good, you're going to need a couple.
Patience, Bears fans.
Yeah.
Patience.
You're going to do an ad read now?
Yeah.
I'm going to go get a tissue.
I'm going to remind you that the PFF NFL podcast is sponsored by Western and Southern Financial Group. While you focus on your roster moves, Western and Southern helps advance your money moves. Buying your first home, planning to start a family, wondering how to make your money grow? Western and Southern's playbook of life insurance, investment, and retirement solutions helps you rest assured on game day. Team up to understand needs and address goals with a game plan built just for you. Get started at westernsouthern.com/PFF. All right, living that dream again, solo pod. Before Sam gets back, we're moving on to the Detroit Lions. Where are the Lions in their rebuild? Well, last year, new regime comes in. They trade Matthew Stafford. They have excellent draft capital going into this season, or going into this draft. They've got picks 2, 32, and 34. Five picks in the top 101. They have 10 picks total. So double the picks that the Bears have right now. I mean, that's what the Bears aren't going to get the same level of draft picks, but they need to, the Bears need to draft, trade back just to get that level, that number of picks. The Lions pick three times before the Bears even pick, just for some perspective. So the Lions are well positioned to get this roster back on track. And I think if you look at last season, we say this a lot about rebuilding teams. What are you trying to get out of a season? I mean, you're trying to get players that you can build around going forward. And when you see an Amon-Ra St. Brown as a fourth round pick just emerge, and it's like, all right, that fills a need for next year, because they pretty much came into this year probably needing three wide receivers. Well, now they have one. They're bringing back Josh Reynolds. Had some young corners play last year who could be a part of this thing. Through that lens, seems like the Lions had a decent season last year as far as finding some young players that they could build around.
Yeah, the Lions are incredibly fascinating because they're one of the few teams that's ever been given the luxury of really attacking a rebuild as a multi-year project, right? Almost everybody, you come in, and there might be talk of, you know, this is a multi-year thing, but realistically, like, you're expected to win year two. And if you don't, you're out of there, right? The Lions legitimately appear to have been given the luxury to say, plot this out for me. How do we get from where we are now, which is terrible, let's be honest, right, to a Super Bowl? What does that look like? And they've gone, right, year one, everything is built in the trenches. We're going to get offensive linemen, we're going to get defensive linemen, we're going to get tougher inside, and we're going to set a foundation so that everything else can function in year two. Year two is where we are now. Now is presumably where we start to deploy some resources at receiver or at cornerback, right? Build from the inside out, get those perimeter players that can hit the ground running a little bit faster than those offensive line. And then the real big question mark is, when in this project does the quarterback happen, right? And is that now? Does he come in year two, or is that year three? Do we have one more year of a sort of sacrificial lamb in Jared Goff, a guy who can just take the beating until we're ready for the quarterback, and then next year is when we get that guy? And that becomes pertinent because we have these two picks at the top and the bottom of the first round, and all of a sudden there's talk that Malik Willis could go number two, and that he's the guy that Detroit could take, which it makes some sense because they don't have to play him year one. So you can still have Goff can still be the guy that takes the beating this year, only you have acquired the quarterback. He's just sitting on the bench learning, right, to be deployed next year. They also have the pick at the bottom of the first round. And in a year where nobody loves these quarterbacks, maybe that's where you take one, right? A first-round quarterback, but a guy that, you know, is hope rather than guarantee. Or do you put the whole thing off to next year and you just deploy these first round picks on finding an elite wide receiver, finding an elite corner, you know, finding these guys that will make the rest of the roster really good, and then next year is where you attack replacing Jared Goff?
So I think the reality of it is you could do both, right? And this goes back to that argument of if you really need a quarterback, do you just keep drafting quarterbacks? And I'm not saying it has to be at two, but in this draft, I mean, like, who do you want to draft at two? We've given him Kyle Hamilton before, you know, a do-it-all safety with incredible range. Do you want to get a Kayvon Thibodeau or Aiden Hutchinson if either one of those guys are there? What do you want to do at two? Because there's no slam dunk player at two. Last year at this time, it's like if you took a non-quarterback, if you took Kyle Pitts or Ja'Marr Chase, you could get your payoff at two. Are you getting that at number two? Do you want to just take a Malik Willis or whichever quarterback you like this year and say we're open to drafting a quarterback next year as well?
I think it all
starts. They have two first-rounders next year as well.
Yeah.
And if another QB emerges and they're still picking in the top 10 for whatever reason, are you afraid to take another one?
So I
would hope not.
But that's why I think it realistically starts with the question, does the quarterback come now or next year in this project, right? Presumably this was all set out long-term based off how they've been doing everything so far. There should be a plan for when the quarterback arrives, right? And is that supposed to be now or is that supposed to be next year? Because they have the flexibility to do it in either year.
And I would say both.
Right. You would say both. I would say almost everybody else in the world would suggest it's happening in one or the other. And I think their entire approach starts with that question. Is it happening now or next year? Given the state of these quarterbacks, my gut says it's next year.
I also think the hedge is pick 32, picking a quarterback. It's going to be the third, fourth quarterback off the board. But you're talking, is it Matt Corral? Is it Sam Howell? It's somebody where I would feel good taking him in the second round just to see. But if you're taking him at 32, you get the fifth-year option. If it gets to that point, I think that's a pretty common play. So for me personally, I'm shopping two as much as possible. You're probably not going to get much for it. You probably have to pick at two. But I'd look at quarterback at 32 and then say, look, with the two first-rounders next year, we'll see what happens. Maybe we're going quarterback again.
Yeah. I mean, personally, I think I would punt on quarterback this year. If that was the plan, I guess that's my point. If that was the plan originally, you know, when this whole thing was drawn up on the big-ass whiteboard in Detroit, you know, Dan Campbell out here scrawling on the whiteboard with marker clenched between his fist, just hammering it. If that's how this was drawn up way back when, that's what you should stick to.
Is that the right Dan Campbell caricature?
Oh, yeah.
I think so.
100%. That man draws on the whiteboard with a marker in his fist.
Yeah.
Just...
it's a grinder.
Tell me it's not.
Grinding it out.
Tell me it's not. By the way, did you see him in Indy, in the combine?
No.
He was walking around rocking like bell-bottom jeans. Like,
good for him.
Where do you even get them?
Good for him.
Where has he even found those? A, the man has got, you know, the kind of problems that you have in terms of finding clothing. He's a large human being.
When you
right?
find you a pair of pants that fit, you buy them.
He's had those for a while, is all I'm saying.
So that's where he got them. And he got them somewhere in like...
right, someone back in the late 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's just stuck with them ever since.
They were tough to find in the late 80s, I think, too.
Well, whatever. Whenever he found them, he's still rocking them. So look, if that was the plan and the quarterback was coming year three, you don't do it this year. You pick the best players at the top of the draft. You find whoever you love. And I would imagine, you know, that it's going to depend, obviously, what Jacksonville does at number one. If Jacksonville goes Aiden Hutchinson, you're going to go either...
Kayvon Thibodeau, Kyle Hamilton.
Right. I don't
Derek
think
Stingley.
You're picking an offensive tackle. So you're picking the best defensive player off the board, essentially.
Should Sauce Gardner be in play at two?
Should he? Maybe.
If Gardner... I don't know what's going to happen on the PFF draft board, but the more I watch Gardner and see him ticking all the boxes, I mean, really ticking all the boxes,
yeah.
Size, speed, production, off-field, seems like he's great. He could be in play at two because corner is definitely an issue for the Lions. And I know Lions fans are like, no, we just spent number three on Jeffrey Okuda 2 years ago. It's like, well, you still have to find somebody.
Yeah.
Or multiple people out there.
The first thing would be, if Jacksonville does go offensive tackle, I think they would run Aiden Hutchinson's name.
Oh, absolutely. They're going Hutch.
But if Hutchinson isn't there, then it becomes a much trickier decision. And I agree. I think Sauce Gardner should be in play at number two. I don't think he will be.
No, probably not.
I think he should be.
Cornerback depth chart. What's that? It's a noise. Is that you? Cornerback depth chart for the Lions includes Jeffrey Okuda, Amani Oruwariye.
Friend of the show.
Who is?
Amani Oruwariye.
Oh, right.
We talked to him.
We had Amani. I wasn't there.
I know.
And then last year, you had some play. We had guys play. Jerry Jacobs, and A.J. Parker. You know, those are the guys that are like, hey, you know, they could be part of the future here. Fatu Melifonwu. So there's, like, intrigue there at corner, but it's still a big need.
Yeah.
Pure pass rusher, also a need. So if it is just Thibodeau left, they need a Thibodeau as well. Because you still have Trey Flowers under contract. We'll see if they end up doing anything with Flowers. You have Romeo Okwara. You have Julian Okwara, but it's not like you can't. They could potentially try to move on from Trey Flowers, get younger and cheaper at that position with Thibodeau.
And they're also a team with the flexibility to say, we can chase greatness in Kyle Hamilton. Like, that's a guy that can change what you do on defense. Like, the range of outcomes is broader for a guy like Hamilton than it is for some of these other players. But the high end, like the what happens if he hits, what happens if he's as good as we think he is, can be spectacular. So because they have that extra first-round pick, I think they have the kind of flexibility to chase somebody like that in a way some of these other teams can't.
And then the thing that's really attractive is the offensive line is completely locked up, not just for this year, but for the next 2 years. And other than Jonah Jackson, for the next 3 years, you know, offensive line, other than just adding backups and depth, offensive line is intact. That is a beautiful thing where we talk about the rest of the league. Almost every team that we're fixing here needs a multiple guards and
it's
a starting tackle.
Like, it's not just intact, but
they're good.
It's a good unit.
With Taylor Decker and Penei Sewell at tackle, Frank Ragnow, when healthy, one of the best centers in the league. And I kind of like how it's built, right? They're three best players. It's tackle, center, tackle.
Right.
And they're good enough at guard. Beautiful way to build the offensive line. So love where Detroit is there. And I'm thinking if they don't go QB at 32, they also have pick 34. That could be a great place for the receivers that start to fall too, right? As far as there'll be some receivers, I think, that go top half, middle of the first round. But I think the value starts to get good again in the second round in a place where the Lions can at least grab somebody there.
Yeah, receiver is absolutely something that they should be hammering in this draft. And I think, again, that was always going to be the plan, to absolutely grab some receivers. And you're right, the top of the second round, the bottom of the first round, that's going to be the right kind of area for some of these receivers.
Right now, you know, we don't know what happens with a guy like Jameson Williams, 17 on our board, but does the injury drop him? Is he still a middle of the first round type of player?
If it does, any team that halts that slide is going to get a steal. And look, somebody emailed me a while ago because I railed against this before, basically saying that I don't think the injury should drop him at all. And they were saying that, oh, he's going to miss out on, you know, the physical, like OTAs, right, essentially, the physical time of preparing for an NFL season year one. Like, yeah.
That's fine.
I mean, he will. I don't care. I don't think that materially changes what he's going to do, even in year one, let alone years two through whatever.
But even if you were worried, like, you're not just drafting for year one.
Right. But, like, if that's the thing, if that's the one aspect you're concerned about, that, hey, he's going to miss some OTAs, and that's physically, those are physical reps that he can't get back for year one, I honestly don't care. Like, that is such a small part of him being good as a rookie. It's just not relevant. So if you're telling me that's the difference between him going like 17 and 25, could not care less.
Yeah.
Grab the guy whenever you have an opportunity to.
I agree. I mean, if I'm the Lions, I'm doubling up a wide receiver from a draft pick standpoint. I'm looking at corners. Depending on what they want to do with Trey Flowers, pass rusher could be in play, but also the quarterback situation, right? I mean, are you doing something at two? I think probably not. I am of the minds that you take somebody at 32, and one of your luxury Stafford picks. And here's the deal: if the Stafford trade gives you two shots at a quarterback, you take the two Stafford picks, or whatever it is. This would be one of them, and you take two shots at a quarterback: one this year, one next year. I mean, that's a high end, you know, view of how to fix the quarterback position.
My only problem with that is the situation there for the quarterback that you grab to be good? Or are you just automatically burning the pick because there's no chance that guy can succeed behind what you currently have?
Right? I mean, trust me, I'm very intrigued by the strategy of
the offensive line, build the nucleus. The offensive line is good. So that part is fine, right?
And they're there for 23.
Right. Whoever you put back there is not dealing with a Justin Fields situation from last year in terms of you're going to die because there's nobody protecting you. The issue is your wide receivers. So right now, Amon-Ra St. Brown did very well year one. He looks like he's going to be your slot receiver going forward. You have Quintez Cephas, and that's it. So somewhere you need a wide receiver group this offseason, which, again, I think should be the approach. But if you start now deviating and grabbing a quarterback rather than grabbing receivers for the quarterback to throw to, I worry that you set that guy up for failure, and automatically it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? You're creating the need to go back to the well in year two because the guy never had a chance year one. That's why, you know, if this was a three-year gig, Jared Goff gets one more year of getting his ass beat in, you know, until the situation is good enough for a guy to step in.
The Lions are in pretty good shape overall, though. I mean, you've got enough cap space to do some stuff. I would consider, I keep mentioning Trey Flowers. Is it time to move? I love Trey Flowers. He hasn't been worth the money that they paid him in Detroit. Is it time to move on from a Trey Flowers? Is it time to free up space there and just get younger overall? And again, think 23 and 24. Those are the years we're looking to compete. Because free agent-wise, you got to do something at safety. Tracy Walker's a free agent. You only have one safety under contract. That's Will Harris. They have to do something at safety. I think you want to attack that. Unless they're all in on Kyle Hamilton, I think you have to attack safety in free agency. There are some decent names there to play around with, but other than that, anywhere else you'd be looking to spend?
I would want to bring in a wide receiver in free agency. Just take off one of those guys. But because this is this long-term project, you're going to want guys that are young enough, right? So, I mean, Allen Robinson is 28. I think even that is probably older than I would want to go.
Yeah.
You're looking at the Michael Gallups of the world, who's 26. You're looking at DJ Chark, who's 25. Those are the players. Marquez Valdes-Scantling, they're another one that could be in on a guy like that, just the guy that's bringing elite speed to the table. So if you could bring in one of those guys knowing they're not going to be your number one and you're going to have a shot at somebody in the draft or whatever, I would be all for that.
And, of course, Rashard Higgins.
Always.
Get Higgins over there.
Higgins is always my number four receiver for every team I own.
Zay Jones is an intriguing one. He's only 27. He had that late breakout in 2021. Could be one of those guys if you get him for 2 or 3 years that that has figured it out as a low-end two, high-end three type of receiver. So I'd take a look there as well. All right, we feel like we've done some stuff for the
so
Lions.
So who are we taking in the first round?
All right, in the first round,
Let's assume that Hutchinson is number one.
Hutchinson goes one. I gave him Kyle Hamilton in my last mock. After the combine, I'm really thinking about Sauce. I'm thinking about Sauce Gardner there. But I'll stick with Hamilton at two.
I think they would love to trade down but won't get the offer.
Oh, yeah, completely agree. I would absolutely trade down. I mean, again, every team at the top that's not taking a QB should be looking to trade down.
Like, but if you could trade down to 10, get Sauce Gardner, and pick up whatever else extra, jackpot.
But the way you do that is a team like the Giants who have two picks, right? If they're just like, we've got this whole blue chip thing, like we said last year. Everybody has these blue chip players. And if some teams only have two on their board or four on their board, they want to get to that spot, even if it is a non-QB. Would a team like the Giants be intrigued to come up just because they have the other pick? I don't see a team like the Eagles have three picks, but I don't think they're going to jump all the way to two, right? So
yeah, I mean,
don't have a trade partner.
It's usually only a quarterback that elicits that kind of deal, and nobody wants the quarterbacks enough this year.
So if you have to pick a two, where are you going?
I would be all for Hamilton, I think, would be the place I would go. I think a lot of it depends on where they are on Thibodeau. Like, he's the guy that polarizes opinion, right?
We're
really not far removed from him being the presumptive number one overall pick, of him saying, that's the guy. In absent of a quarterback, Thibodeau's the number one guy. And then all of a sudden you're hearing talk about, does he love football enough? Is he too interested in other things? And blah, 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 right? And most of it's probably crap, right?
I'm more worried about you don't have multi-year domination from Kayvon Thibodeau.
No.
The other guys that I would have taken one overall on the edge are the Boses, Myles Garrett, and Chase Young. And they were multi-year dominant players.
You don't really have it for Hutchinson either, though.
Nope, you have 1 year. You have 1 year of dominant trade.
And I think the pass rush part is close enough that you could go that way. I'm just saying that there are going to be teams out there, I would assume, that still love Thibodeau.
Yeah.
Right? There's others that apparently have decided that he doesn't love football enough and it's a risk and blah, 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 and he might slide because of that. But if the Lions are one of those teams who still have him as the number one guy on the board, then obviously they're going to be elated that he's there too. So a lot of it depends on that. Personally, I think I would grab Kyle Hamilton and say that the upside of him, if he's spectacular, is insane.
Yeah.
Let's roll with that.
And just for perspective, the reason why trading down is so cool and so awesome.
So cool.
Like if you traded an eight, I said I would consider Sauce Gardner at 10.
Right. That's
I would
what I'm
consider
saying.
Derek Stingley.
Eight spots lower.
If you got him at 8 or 10, plus you had another second rounder, third rounder, whatever that other thing is, you're getting shots at two players.
So who are you taking with their second pick, the 30?
I'm going QB at 32.
Come on.
I'm going best QB on my board. Because that to me that's a free pick from the Rams. Where you're taking a shot at your quarterback.
He's gonna suck though.
He's not gonna suck.
Drafting a quarterback at 32, he's
you don't know. I mean, Dak Prescott was drafted in the hundreds.
Yeah.
You don't know. You don't know. Sam Howell. Sam Howell's my guy at 32.
Ugh.
All right. What do you want? What do you want at 32?
At 32. I want a 32. Well, again, it depends what you did at 2. But if you've taken Hamilton, I want an edge rusher at 32, or I want a wide receiver at 32.
Okay.
And then where's my pick in the top of the second?
And then you have 34.
Yeah.
You have 32 and 34.
Wide receiver and edge rusher are the next two spots coming up there.
All right. Lions are fixed. Look at us. Just fixing all the teams that are rebuilding here in the NFC North. The other place you could rebuild is with All 22, our new friends that are unveiling the newest fantasy football game that hundreds of PFF employees are playing. All 22 uses weekly PFF grades as one of its main scoring components and tests your ability to build a full 53-man roster, including the offensive line. Positional value, all that fun stuff, is all baked in. If you ever dreamt of sitting in an NFL front office, if you enjoy the scouting process as much as we do, you're going to want to check out All 22. You can join the waitlist at all-22.com with nothing more than your email. If you join the waitlist before the NFL draft, you'll receive a special promo code for your All-22 subscription. Waitlist users will even gain access to premium contents like inaugural draft guides, in-season strategies, feature release announcements, and more. Be sure to follow All22_PFF on Twitter. It's at All22_PFF on Twitter. Look at these guys. The founders of All22. You can see them here on YouTube. These guys are passionate. They had a dream, and they're making it come true here. Fantasy football involving every single player on the field. All 22, less fantasy, more football. Who's next in the NFC North? Minnesota? Green Bay. All right, how are we fixing the Packers? I would bring Aaron Rodgers back, and yeah. I would bring Davante Adams back.
I believe they're doing that.
Oh, okay, good. Just as long as we're on the same page as the Packers. As mentioned, I don't think the Rodgers contract is going to hamstring the Packers.
It's going to help this year, I think.
Yeah, for this year, it's actually going to free up space. I don't think we have the official numbers on that. But the Packers have never been huge players in free agency. They still won't be big players in free agency. I mean, to maximize the next however many years of Aaron Rodgers, got to draft well. That's a hope, not a strategy. I say that all the time.
Hmm.
But that is the hope, is you're adding impact players for the next couple of years. Because it's not like you're going to get them elsewhere.
Yeah. I think that this is the year they finally give Aaron Rodgers a first-round wide receiver to play with.
I'm curious where the value is going to be there, though.
I think he'll be pretty good. Bottom of the first?
Depends on how many guys fall, right?
Well, okay. So let's game it out, right? The bottom of the first round, you're going to lose. Like Drake London should be gone. Garrett Wilson should be gone. You would assume Jameson Williams and Chris Olave would be gone.
Yeah, and then
from that point, I think
then just started, based off our board, we have Treylon Burks at 29, Sky Moore at 30. I don't know if this has been shaken up yet.
It has been. Should have been. Yeah.
This has already been done, so yeah. Burks should be lower. I thought we moved Christian Watson up a lot higher where we were, because we have a drop-off from like 29 and 30, Burks and Moore, Jahan Dotson at 42. He could be a fringe first-rounder. But then it drops off to like Jalen Tolbert at 58, George Pickens at 59. I don't know if late first is the best place or not. It depends on
I think guys like Treylon Burks could slip that far based off what we know from him now. Guys like Sky Moore could have propelled himself up that far based off what he's done at the Combine. A guy like Christian Watson from North Dakota State may have propelled himself up that far based off the insane workout that he had at the Combine. So, I mean, in our, like, literally, if you just work off our PFF big board numbers and you sort of say, yeah, that might not be the sweet spot, bottom of the first round, but I think there's going to be receivers there that, like, the overall consensus board puts in that ballpark that if you're Green Bay, you'd be all for.
There's several really good athletes, too, in that next tier. Alec Pierce from Cincinnati, Khalil Shakir from Boise State, Justin Ross, fascinating player who looked incredible as a true freshman. Got injured in 2020 and just never really you know, it had uneven quarterback play last year. Could you imagine Justin Ross paired with Aaron Rodgers? You know, the payoff could be incredible there. So there are players in that second tier, our second tier of receivers, that would be really intriguing for the Packers.
And, you know, if there are people scared enough of the ACL injury for Jameson Williams, it's not beyond the realm of possibility that he's still there when Green Bay pick at 28 or whatever it is.
All those teams, the Packers, the Chiefs, the Rams, like all those teams that are already loaded, NFL, do not let Jameson Williams fall to them. Do not let Jameson Williams fall to a team that's going to turn him into one of the best deep threats in the NFL. He could be one of the best deep threats in the NFL for you.
Yeah.
In the middle of the first.
So I do think that there's going to be receivers that make sense at the bottom of the first for Green Bay if they want to go that way, and I think they probably should.
Go what, receiver?
Yeah, like it's by far the biggest area of need on this team. It's by far the thing that they've been harped on at for the longest in terms of you have Aaron Rodgers throwing to Devontae Adams, the end. That's all you've had for years. Why will you not give this guy some help? Remember the last time it was like you need to give him help. They go and draft his replacement and spark this rage revenge tour from Aaron Rodgers has now resulted in them handing him all of the money and bringing back Devontae
Adams.
But
that was what we predicted. We said this is going to get the best out of Aaron Rodgers and he goes back-to-back MVPs.
So somebody...
Right or wrong.
Yeah. Somebody raised the point of like, it's not a wasted pick because it created this, right? Is this in fact one of... It's like the... You know, when a player like Peyton Manning goes down for the year, right? It's like he should win MVP because Curtis Painter is like the worst quarterback in the entire world.
Just an idiot take, but yeah.
Right. But this is like the draft version of that, right? Is this in fact one of the best draft picks of all time?
Right.
Because it created the Aaron Rodgers revenge tour that's now 2.5 years in the offing and about to set the world on fire again.
Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady are two of the weirdest cats when it comes to that stuff, you know, chip on their shoulder motivation guys that I would almost buy it. Much better than the Peyton Manning's most valuable because he's not there.
Right.
Take.
Particularly if you could convince me, like if there was somewhere on record of somebody saying that it was deliberate, you know, we did it to light a fire under Rodgers' ass, right? He'd been mailing it in the last few years and he was just good, not great.
Yeah.
And we thought, you know what'll really piss him off? Let's draft his replacement.
Certainly worth.
If you could find somebody that would put that on record and say that's why they did it, then I would be on board and saying that's one of the best draft picks ever.
So the problem with that draft in 2020 is the next few picks. A.J. Dillon, running back in the second round. And A.J. Dillon was fantastic last year. He was great. But you're still not adding – you could be adding more value to the team. That's all. And I love Dillon. And I think he did add a whole different dimension to the run game and all that fun stuff. But the problem is the other draft picks. I thought Eric Stokes was fine in the first round last year.
He was pretty good, actually.
Yeah, he was good. And so you've got the last year at this time, it was like, hey, cornerback two is the biggest issue on the Packers. And I think they handled it well, certainly with Eric Stokes and Rasul Douglas last year. I would see if you could bring Rasul Douglas back on the cheap because you know he's played well in your system, had a career year. But that trio of corners could be really good. So I would look into the Rasul Douglas stuff. From a receiver standpoint, they're probably going to have to get rid of Randall Cobb. Alan Lazard, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, who we mentioned over and over again, they're all hitting free agency. If Rodgers lets his... Yeah, what if they have to cut his top free agent, Randall Cobb?
That's what I'm saying.
That's what... When I talked to Brad Spielberger on the PFF NFL Daily, which again, screenshot it. Hey, I subscribe to the Daily. Hey, I subscribe to the PFF NFL podcast. Email it to... NFLpodcast@pff.com, and you could be in the running for a free Edge subscription. But on the Daily, Brad was saying, look, they're not going to have to make a ton of moves. You probably have to lose Randall Cobb, and you probably have to lose Za'Darius Smith on the Edge, right? So two players. So it's not that egregious, at least for this year, the Rodgers deal. But if you lose Cobb, here are where the two major holes are on the team. You lose Cobb, you lose Za'Darius Smith. You need edge rushers, and you need receivers. Because the edge rush situation, you have Rashawn Gary heading into what? His last – is he heading into year four? He'll have a fifth-year option. Beyond that, though, Preston Smith isn't locked up beyond this year. Say Za'Darius gone. He only has 1 year left, too. Plus the entire defense. Darnell Savage heads into his fifth-year option soon. Adrian Amos is in his last year. They have to re-up Jair Alexander really soon. They've got some work to do just to keep some of their nucleus together on the defense. You've got to get younger on the defensive side of the ball as well.
Yeah, and that's where you need to start. You know, I mean, not start. You need to be drafting well because you're going to have to replace these guys and or re-up them, and that's going to get harder with all that money tied up in Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams at least for a year. Remember, like, he's, if you franchise tag him and don't get a deal done, I mean, he's out of here next year as well, unless you want to franchise him again, which is only getting more expensive. So there's a lot. Green Bay's issue right now is essentially depth and or future-proofing this roster. I don't know how much they care about that, you know, and how much they're prepared to basically mortgage any potential future for the last couple of years to be squeezed out of Aaron Rodgers, you know, a bit like the Patriots said that they did with Tom Brady. Like, we saw the writing was on the wall, it was coming, and we decided to put everything into these last couple of years, and then ultimately we had to pay the price at some point. Maybe that'll be Green Bay's approach, right? Which is, yeah, this isn't going to last forever, but neither is Aaron Rodgers, so let's just really target the next 2 years and try and get that second ring. Maybe that's their approach. But either way, you need to start, like, attacking those future areas and depth. Like, the two spots that they really need to address are wide receiver. You got to have somebody beyond Davante Adams one time ever. And they weirdly need to replace Devondre Campbell, who came out of nowhere and was like an all-pro linebacker. Now, the good news is they only need one, because that defense, like, plays so little linebacker snaps that you can get away with one guy, right? Devondre Campbell essentially on his own was their linebacker core last year in the middle. So they do just need to replace that one guy, but they do need to replace him.
The other thing that the Packers, I think, need to do, like Dennis Kelly, who filled, you know, their swing tackle, who filled in, did a nice job last year, did a nice job the year before for the Titans. Just bringing back those types of players, sixth offensive tackle, bring Kelly back maybe on the cheap in free agency. I mentioned, can you get Rasul Douglas cheap because he had that good year with you, or is he going to get paid because he had got his hands on the ball a ton this year? I think those are the types of moves that the Packers always tend to make, smaller moves that have, you know, that just keep the depth, you know. You're also losing big Bob Tonyan at tight end.
Big Bob Tonyan.
At free agency, right? I mean, look, there's this world where did Aaron Rodgers make Tonyan, right? Because Rodgers playing really good ball, and you could make anybody a pretty good receiving tight end in this offense, especially with the amount of attention that Davante Adams gets. But you just don't want to play that game. Whether you have Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady or a mid-tier quarterback, you still want to do everything you can to put the best people out there, especially from a pass catch standpoint. And if Davante Adams gets hurt, what are they going to do?
I mean, if they get hurt, you're screwed.
Like, right. Who are your options?
I think that's true.
And if Davante Adams gets played the way the Niners play them in the playoffs,
yes,
where all of a sudden they're doing everything they can to double him, no matter where he is, you need to have those other options.
Yeah.
So the Packers have to hit on receivers. That's a bigger priority. Receivers and tight ends for every team. You say this for every team, Steve. For every team. But if they're going to maximize Rodgers for the next 1, 2, 3, however many years here, need some non-Devontae targets here.
I think a guy like Sky Moore would be a great pick for them.
I almost mocked him to them late first.
It would be like, look, if you look on almost every other board out there, it would be a reach, but I don't think it would be. I think given what we just learned about him at the combine in terms of the guy he's got like 4.4 speed, flat, that suddenly paints him in a different light. Like his tape is insane. And the only question mark when you're looking at a guy like that who plays at Western Michigan is, okay, but this is against Western Michigan and the level of competition they play at. Does that really work against, you know, SEC competition or NFL competition? And I think when you show up and you run a 4.4 flat, I think that answers a lot of those questions, right? It's like, yeah, I mean, if you run 4.4 flat, there's no reason it doesn't work against the NFL, right?
Yeah.
So Sky Moore's tape is arguably as good as any receiver in this class. As I said, the question is,
we have him high on our board. Is he going to go first round? Is he going to go second round?
I think he goes in the second round. Yeah. But I don't think – that's what I'm saying. I think if you picked him at 28, it would be hailed as a reach.
Yeah.
You know, everybody would be out there going, that's a terrible pick. It's a reach. And I don't think it would be. I think you'd end up looking – 12 months' time, you know, fast forward a year, I think you'd end up looking really smart if you did that.
Yeah. I mean, ideally, if you can get him at 60, that's probably too late though, right? So the Packers have picked 28 and picked 60.
That's the thing. It's like, is it too much of a reach to take him at the bottom of the first, knowing that you're not picking again until the bottom of the second, where he's probably gone? And this is the classic example of what you're not supposed to do, right? Fall in love with a player and overdraft him because of that.
Yeah.
But I just think, I don't think it would be a reach taking him at 28 is my main point.
Gutekunst on his press conference last year, I was listening to him. He said it's kind of their strategy. He learned from Ted Thompson, right? If you like a player, you go get him.
Yeah, they did that with, just take him.
They did it with Amari Rodgers last year. And they get to this point on the board where it's like, that's my player. That's right. My guy.
And look.
But they tell they're like, do whatever it takes to go get him. Like, I don't care. They're not even thinking about the trade. Right. They're just like, just get him. And they did that with Rodgers last year.
But I am acutely aware that there's a degree of, you know, inconsistency or hypocriticalness when you're criticizing the Raiders for not doing that, right?
Sure.
Or for doing that but not being aware of, like, nobody else has that guy ranked there, right?
Yeah.
Because in theory, if you're aware of that and you're like, yeah, I understand this is a massive reach relative to everybody else's board, you should be trying to trade back and get and maximize the value, right? Now, the problem with this one is the consensus ranking of Sky Moore probably puts him right between those two picks, right? And it's like, can you trade back enough to pick up some value and still get the guy you want? And the answer might not be yes. So look, I guess my point would be, if you're on if pick number 28 comes up and you start fielding phone calls and you can get back to 40, do it immediately, right?
Yeah.
If you can't and you're left with the option of take Sky Moore at 28 or risk that you're not getting Sky Moore, I would take him at 28, and I don't think you'd be upset by that.
All right, so we're giving him Sky Moore here?
Yeah.
In the first round to go with Davante Adams?
Yes.
Can they bring Alan Lazard back as a three?
Well, you've also got Amari Rodgers to sort of step into the Randall Cobb role, which
true.
Presumably has to be vacated if Aaron Rodgers lets it happen.
Do they try to get a good pass-catching tight end? Or are you just trusting Josiah DeGuara to be the next guy there?
Also the great Mercedes Lewis. Don't forget that.
Mercedes still going. Father Time is not cannot beat Tom Brady and Mercedes Lewis.
Well, Mercedes is too big. Father Time's got no shot.
Mercedes is that guy that, like, turned back the clock and is all of a sudden, like, just trucking dudes.
Well, we spent, like, 10 years doing nothing but blocking, and then all of a sudden it's like, what if we throw him a pass? Just smashes people.
It's well-rested. It's like modern-day Lee Smith, except Lee Smith plays modern-day.
Still, yeah.
But he just retired. Did he just retire?
Might have done, yeah. All 330 pounds.
That's your favorite
playing
player.
Playing tight end. It's hilarious.
We need a Lee Smith tribute video. He's also a hero. Maybe not to Villanueva's status, but...
No.
What if they had Villanueva here playing right tackle?
Well, maybe he's only retired as a tackle. Maybe you can get him in at tight end.
Oh, so that's what it is. Get Villanueva out of retirement to play tight end. There you go. There's your big threat. Imagine him in the red zone with Rodgers. 10 touchdown guy.
Yeah.
Immediately. As long as he didn't lose his athleticism like I did with age. It's tough at this size to maintain your athleticism.
Well, certainly the evidence with you appears to be that it is, yes.
In my initial mock, I had Jermaine Johnson, the edge defender from Florida State, going at 28 to the Packers. I don't think he's going to last that long. NFL loves him a little bit more than I do. Tore up the Senior Bowl, so he probably goes top 15. But they have to get younger at pass rusher. It can't just be Rashawn Gary and whatever Preston Smith has left here. So I think that's another place that if you take that forward-looking approach, you can get by this year if you keep Preston and you have Gary. But it still would be a good play to get younger there.
Yeah. So
somebody at 60 could be good value, though.
Yeah, it's going to be one of those spots where when you draft a pass rusher, people are going to go, why are you doing that? You've got Gary, you've got Preston Smith, you've got Za'Darius Smith, but it's future-proofing it, right?
Yeah. So bring back Dennis Kelly. That's your big free agent move.
That's your big
free agent. Get your swing tackle because you're the Packers. You're not making a big splash in free agency. Dennis Kelly's coming back. Try to get Lazard on the cheap, in my opinion. Plus a Sky Moore, plus Amari Rodgers. Now you're cooking. Now you're cooking at receiver. And draft an edge at 60.
That they would also be a team that might kick the tires on one of those reclamation project tight ends in free agency, the O.J. Howards or the Evan Engrams of the world, guys that really didn't live up to a first-round pick but might be available for, like, not much money.
Evan Engram would be great.
Right.
As a rejuvenation.
That's what
project.
I'm saying.
I like that. That's a good job.
Thank you.
Hold on one second.
You want us to pause the podcast while you reply to a text?
Yes.
Is that what we're saying here? I'm not a great...
I don't respond to every text from my wife, but this is just an important one.
Okay.
So we're good.
It's all right.
We're good now. We're good. She's got it sorted. We got it all sorted out.
Great.
Are the Packers sorted out? We feeling good about the Packers?
Yeah, we did it.
Look at that. We fixed the Packers. Now it's time for a round of applause. Because I'm going to announce again, this isn't for the first time, we're going to announce Manscaped launching their ultra premium collection. Believe it or not, it's for your not so private parts. I don't read that well every single time.
No.
Every single time.
But I like the way you still keep coming back to the table and giving.
You got to try. You got to try.
Like you.
I'll get it by next week.
Like Chris Ballard in the quarterback position. You got to keep swinging.
Keep swinging, poor guy. I'm talking about a leveled up hygiene routine with your favorite manly scent. It's an all-in-one skin and hair care kit for the everyday man. Covers your whole body, literally. Manscaped is trusted below the waist. Now trust them with the rest. Join the 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going to manscaped.com. For 20% off plus free shipping with the code PFF. Here's your order of operations when it comes to the Manscaped Ultra Premium Collection. Number one, you hop in the shower, scrub-a-dub-dub that body with the Manscaped body wash. Number two, lather your hair up with the 2-in-1 shampoo and conditioner. You can skip two. Just jump right to three, Sam.
Do they have anything for my bald-ass head?
Would you still condition that? You still want to condition that?
I don't know what you're supposed to do with it. It's just a head now.
I would. You don't need the 2-in-1. You just need a 1-in-1.
Just a 1-in-1.
Just condition it. You don't need the shampoo. Condition your bald noggin. Number three, dry off and spray on that hydrating body moisturizer to reinvigorate dry skin. Number four, put on Manscaped deodorant for obvious reasons. And number five, pop that Manscaped lip balm on. Nobody's out here kissing those chapped lips. Mm. You know that? That's true. Getting dressed after that is optional, unless you got to go to work. Wear one great scent all day long. It's 20% off plus free shipping with the promo code PFF. Over at manscaped.com. It's 20% off plus free shipping. Promo code's PFF over at manscaped.com. The power of attraction is now in a bottle thanks to Manscaped. Only have five teams left on this show. We're cooking. Vikings.
Ooh,
you have an hour?
Oh, boy.
We already traded Kirk Cousins to the Carolina Panthers.
We did. That so is that, that.
Do we need consistency across shows here? If you guys listened yesterday, remember we fixed the NFC East and South. As the Carolina Panthers, we traded for Kirk Cousins.
Which leaves us with Kellen Mond in his 21 grade at quarterback.
I mean, it can only go up. It can only go up. I wonder if this regime is more confident in Kellen Mond than the last one.
So I've been asked a couple of times recently about whether the Vikings would trade Kirk Cousins. And I think ultimately the answer is they don't want to. But if the right offer comes along, they'd take it. Like if Carolina gets desperate enough that they start calling up and they're saying, hey, number six overall, we'll take the contract. And, you know, maybe throw in a couple other bells and whistles into the bargain, I think the Vikings would go, I mean, we're intrigued to see what Kirk Cousins would be in this offense. On the other hand, hell yes. You know, send it over right now. So I guess if that's the scenario, they're probably keeping Cousins unless somebody comes in with that offer.
So in this scenario, are we going to stick with Cousins?
I say screw consistency.
Okay, so we're stuck with Cousins.
Yes, for at least a year.
Okay, so what is your team building strategy here if you're the Vikings? I don't want to, because free agency exists first.
Yes.
I don't want to jump to the draft. But in my mock at 12, I took Malik Willis with a lame duck season of Kirk Cousins. And
okay.
I'm forward looking there.
Yeah. I don't hate that. I mean, ultimately, you need a succession plan for Kirk Cousins anyway, because even if you think he can play much better in this system than he did in the old system, that's quite related to this system.
I'm just hearing from ownership and all of the press conferences that they want to compete, right?
Which is weird to me. I don't understand why there's this.
Like all you've done for the last 10 years is compete. You've remained competitive.
You have a one. This is the one year you get the opportunity to press reset on the whole thing, right? And to reboot it in a way that actually takes it off the path that you're on and moves it in a different direction. And instead, you're saying, no, we think we can win now. Like, why? Like, I understand you might be able to, but that the old regime might have been able to, but they weren't, so they got rid of them.
But this is where we've discussed this before. There's 32 different teams, 32 different ways of doing business. When we do our podcast, we make some assumptions on that. We make the assumption that every team wants to win a championship, and that's the ultimate goal.
Yes.
And every move should be made with a championship in mind, whether it's this year or 3 years from now. But the reality is, some teams are legitimately happy with winning 10 games.
But I do think that the Vikings are in that category. I think they do want to win a championship. This is just a weird way of doing it.
And I'm not saying either way where the Vikings land in this whole thing. But when you hear this idea that like, hey, we want to compete right away, like you had the perfect regime to compete right away. Mike Zimmer and Rick Spielman were the perfect combination to win. Right. 8 to 11 games every single year.
The point about the guys you just drop-kicked out of the building is that they couldn't take you from 500 to the Super Bowl. So what you're saying is that this current regime is the difference between being 500 and the Super Bowl. That doesn't – like the whole point is operating basically the same, right, with the same like restrictions, quote unquote.
Right.
I.e. Kirk Cousins and his contract. The whole point about like bringing in a whole new regime, a new GM, a new head coach, guys that are going to be into the data, you know, all these things, right? What that only makes any sense if you're going to have like a drastic departure from what you were doing in the first place. If the first thing they do is to say, we're sticking with Cousins and we're going to win now. And then what was the point? What did you do?
Now, on the other hand, they can win now because look at this division. Bears and the Lions are completely rebuilding. Yeah, Rodgers is back with the Packers.
Uh-huh.
It's once they replace a few of their free agents, it's the same squad as last year, right? You got a few draft picks in there, replace a couple free agents, get younger in the secondary. It's the same squad as last year, and you can make the argument however you want to make it. You're a couple bounces away from a 10 or 11 win team. You're a couple bounces away from whatever, right? So you can make those arguments either way. I just think, do you try to maximize this year and then deal with quarterback later? Or do you just have this forward-looking approach?
I just don't understand any approach that says the best way of getting from where we are to a Super Bowl for Minnesota is to essentially maintain the current course. Because the current course obviously wasn't working, which is why you decided to stop what you were doing, throw down the anchors, and fire everybody, right? So clearly, self-evidently, you believed you were heading in the wrong direction. So all you've done is fire the ship's navigator and the captain, replace them with two new guys, haul anchor, and decide to start moving off again as per usual. Like, that just doesn't make any sense to me.
But you're a big feels guy, right? Feels.
Feels?
Feels. Touchy-feely, right? Like, you would never tank because, right? You would never – I mean, I said I wouldn't tank because you don't want to have a losing culture. Uh-huh. I've said that. But you don't want, like, two quarterbacks in the same room in case they were mad at each other and all that stuff. Right? How would – because if – on paper, human element out of this,
mm-hmm.
I think it's easy to say, look, Kirk's value's high right now because a couple teams are desperate. Trade him. Danielle Hunter, trade him.
Yeah.
Right? Trade these guys and look to the future. But how do you go and tell Justin Jefferson, Christian Darrisaw, Eric Kendricks, some of these guys who are Harrison Smith still locked up, like, we're going to be bad this year?
By saying that next year we're going to win a Super Bowl. Like,
but
they understand.
But you got to keep all those guys engaged for this year. I'm just saying the Vikings are still in this place. It's not the 2019 Dolphins who on paper were bad. And then it's like, okay, you can lose a couple more players and still and be worse and look to the future. They were in full rebuild mode. The Vikings have been in this hybrid mode for 3 years now.
Forever.
3 years, basically.
Since they got Kirk Cousins, they've been locked into this world of you're trapped now in this world of average. You can't get better. You can't get worse. You're stuck.
So what would you really do? Would you try to trade Kirk at all costs?
I would listen to every single offer that was out there for Kirk Cousins. And if somebody like Carolina was willing to throw me the number 6 overall pick, I would ship him over there personally in the back of a U-Haul.
You'd have 6 and 12.
If I was crazy, I would throw Kirk Cousins in the back of that U-Haul and I would drive his ass to that Carolina Panthers building and release.
You don't
you're
think
you
get there quicker via a plane?
No. Like open the back door, and like let him out into the wild. Like you're free. Go forth. That's how I would get rid of Kirk Cousins. Enjoy. Right? You're gone now. And then from that point on, you can actually start to do some real things because the contract is out of there. He's out of there. Now you can start looking to the future in a real way.
I'm just fascinated by what those – I love that picture. What those interviews were. Kwesi sitting down. Like, they have 8 to 10 hour interviews. Here's my plan for the Minnesota Vikings. And
it's
how
the
much –
same. It's exactly what you've been doing, only different.
Yeah, but I mean – but is his sell like, look, Kirk is a top half of the league quarterback – he's better than that a lot of the time. There's some kind of it factor missing that probably is found in wins, right? The missing piece that we probably can't quantify shows up in win totals.
The missing piece of Kirk Cousins is his ability to win games. It's quite a large flaw, but we're willing to roll through it anyway.
But I'm coming from the Niners. I'm coming from Cleveland. And look, what Cleveland did is put together what looked like one of the best rosters around their quarterback last year. And a lot of different stuff happened, and the quarterback got hurt.
Yeah.
But the process was sound. Like, I'm going to surround Kirk Cousins with sound process, and we're going to make sure every position group is solid across the board, and that's going to get us over the hump. Like, was that the sell?
Probably.
Or was it like, we're just going to suck it up for this year and take this full forward-looking approach?
I mean, that was probably the sell. He has to be working on the basis that he can assemble a championship-caliber roster around Kirk Cousins, right? I would simply question.
But it's just for 1 year. Then you're going to re-up him for what, 40?
Right.
He's at 33 APY right now, $33 million. Is he going to make 40?
Yes. Look, there are many problems with rolling with Kirk Cousins as your quarterback. The first of which is I simply don't believe that building a championship caliber roster around him is realistic given the stresses he places on your salary cap, right? So as of right now, the Vikings are $15 million over the cap. Now, obviously, as with every other team, they can free up some space and create some room. But there are only three teams that are in a worse position than they are in terms of being able to free up salary cap space. And the Vikings have a ton of work to do because this roster is not great. The defense has completely fallen apart from the point where it was one of the best units in the NFL. And now I don't know how many pieces you have on that team that are even there long term. The offense is actually in a pretty good spot. You've got Justin Jefferson. You've got Adam Thielen. The offensive line is starting to improve. And I kind of like the idea that in this offense, the offensive line will look better. Like Kevin O'Connell was saying some interesting things about the traits that a guy like Garrett Bradbury has. Remember, a former first-round pick at center who's been pretty disastrous so far for them. But he was talking about like his speed and his agility and the way that that can execute blocks within their specific system that runs all these outside zone plays and blah, blah, blah.
That's what
I know.
But they were running that anyway.
But he's not just saying, like, he's a good player, right? Which would have been a massive red flag,
traits.
Right? Because immediately you're like, that's just not true. But what he's saying is that, like, he has the traits we look for within this offense to execute the blocks we want to run. And I can see an argument that guys like Bradbury and Ezra Cleveland might be better in this new offense, which, again, is very similar to the old offense, but does have some differences. So I think the offense can be put together pretty quickly. But you need to build a whole defense.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have the money to do it.
It's got to be the youth movement defensively that they teased. I mean, this is one of the mistakes of the Spielman regime was getting younger at corner, but really not sticking with it, right? And then deferring to the Patrick Petersons of the world in free agency.
And Bashaud Breeland.
Bashaud Breeland.
Why was that guy ever on the field?
Cameron Dantzler has been pretty good as a fourth round pick. Jeff Gladney, unfortunate, weird off field stuff, but you know, intriguing for, like, that was attack the secondary with youth and volume. They have to do that again. So I think if they're not going QB at 12, I think all the corners we've talked about are in play. Sauce Gardner, don't know where he's going. Anywhere from 2 to 12.
Right.
I'm in on Gardner. I'm in on Trent McDuffie from Washington. I'm in on Derek Stingley if he ends up there at 12 for LSU. I think corner's probably a good play for them.
They just
at
need
12.
To go defense. Like defense, honestly, anywhere defense.
Well, the other thing too, with O'Connell coming in, if he sticks with the Rams system that loves to run 11 personnel, so three wide receivers, that's also the opposite of what was just happening in Minnesota, where they wanted a two wide receiver set. They wanted
at least until last year when they were forced
into it. Last year they were forced into it, but that's also probably part of the pitch, right? Where it's like, hey, you know, we tried to make Cousins into this conservative quarterback. We're going to open it up a little bit. We're going to have three receivers. You have Justin Jefferson. You have Adam Thielen. You have some intriguing guys around him. But what if we have a really good third receiver?
Yeah.
And now we're cooking, because if Irv Smith comes back, there's your four playmakers that are tough to cover. Plus Dalvin Cook, the offense can be explosive.
It really can. And it was explosive last year. Like, the whole point about the Vikings is not that they're going to suck. It's that they'll be good. They'll be pretty good, right? Their baseline is 500, right? So they will be somewhere in that ballpark. And that offense, I think, particularly with the new system that's coming in, could actually be very good this year. The problem is, can you win a Super Bowl? Can you contend this year? And with that defense, the answer is absolutely not, unless you have one of those all-time drafts where you snag like three Hall of Famers in the first three rounds. And that's just not a high percentage play.
The thing about Cousins this year, too, he's only on your cap for one more year. Does this year matter? Do you just maximize this year and just let him go? And then you just go from there? Because you get...
Then you just delayed the real improvement you were going to...
Because the value in trading him is...
Massive.
Draft capital, right? Draft capital and thinking beyond this year. If you're going to re-sign Kirk, you keep him. I mean, it doesn't really matter. He's going to hit free agency next year anyway. But you keep him... You re-sign them and you figure it out. But You get $10 million in dead money. You save $35 million. But it's not about the cap savings for this year because who cares about this year?
But it kind of is, right? If you're trading him away, the benefit is twofold. It's one, you get the draft capital, which could be as high as number six overall. And two, it's you free up $35 million to actually make some plays now, not next year.
True. But you also don't – you have a massive question at quarterback.
Sure. But like, but the point is if you're built – like if this thing has to – if it has to be torn down – to be rebuilt to the point where it can go somewhere different,
yeah,
to higher levels than it was before, that has to start. And there's no point – like if it starts next year, what did you do this year? You just tread water for a year.
The other thing I'm doing if I did trade Kirk, if I'm the Vikings, is bringing in a Marcus Mariota just in case, right? If you get him on the cheap. I've brought Mariota up for
great,
a lot.
The great Mariota versus Kellen Mond battle of 2021.
I'm bringing in Mariota and drafting somebody. You know what I mean? I'm just – just in case. I mean, if Mariota is going to be somewhat cheap and has that career resurgence, you never know.
Sure.
Bring Teddy back.
We haven't seen Mariota in this type of system, right? Like, that would actually be – makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So let's do that. Trade Kirk. I'm going to live in consistency.
Yeah, we're going back to consistency world.
Kirk's been traded for pick number six.
Perfect.
Six, I'm drafting Sauce.
Let's go.
12, I'm drafting Malik Willis.
Okay. If he's there.
And I'm signing Marcus Mariota.
All right.
Vikings. Look at this.
I'm in.
Good job, Kwesi.
And then second round, anything on defense?
Defense, yeah. Edge values there in the second round.
And, hang on, because we traded away Kirk, we can make some plays in free agency.
All right. Who are we getting in free agency here?
Let's add an edge rusher.
Let's add an edge rusher. Randy Gregory?
Ooh, I think his market might go to the moon.
Could be too much.
What about like a Hassan Reddick? Who might be cheaper?
Reddick could be good right now.
Or if you're – no, never mind. Yeah, that's not Reddick I like. Let's give him Reddick.
All right. Reddick's coming in. What are we doing with Danelle Hunter?
I think you keep him. Like, I understand he's costing a lot of money, and he's been injured forever.
Yeah.
But he's really good, and he's young still. Like, he's only 27. So
can we get out from Michael Pierce contract, Dalvin Tomlinson. There's a lot of dead money involved there.
I mean, I would start – those are the ones I would look to move on from more.
Pierce,
than,
you can save some money, but you have to incur some dead money as well.
Yeah. Like, Danelle Hunter, to me, is a restructure more than he is get rid of.
The other interesting component here – I know we take a long time. We're going a long time here, but Adam Thielen is a ton of money. He's a very, very good player. But are there a lot of other Adam Thielens around the NFL now? Comparable receivers for that type of price, I would maybe consider looking at him. Maybe not trading right away, but looking for his replacement for next year.
Sure. I mean, you can always I never stop looking for receivers.
Perfect.
But right now, I think you'd be happy to keep them.
Have we fixed the Vikings?
Yeah.
All right. Now we're on to the NFC West. Is that right? The West. Arizona Cardinals, first up here. The Kyler question. Don't sigh.
Ugh, I can't hear.
Only four teams left. Look, we've fixed 28 teams in the NFL so far.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty impressive.
But now you have to talk about Instagram.
And when I say fix, we're going to fix the Rams. They were Super Bowl champs. We're fixing everybody. Everybody needs to be fixed.
Well, that one should be easy.
So we're the GM here in Arizona. Kyler has brought us back into the Instagram fold. We're in the mix.
Mm.
We're there.
We're Steve Keim.
We're Steve Keim for a minute. We've Kyler's acknowledged us on social media. Is the bridge no longer, smoking? It's not burnt yet. It's just a little smoke.
Where there's smoke, there's fire.
Yeah.
But
we can put it out. We can put the smoke out before it becomes fire.
Okay.
That doesn't make
any
sense.
So that's just what, smoldering?
Is that a metaphor? Give me a metaphor. Get me up to zero.
You're not getting -2 for that one. So here's the thing, right? The whole Kyler stuff is just, it was a giant, I want my money and I want it now. The Cardinals... We want to give you your money, but we want to give it to you next year, right?
Yeah.
I think Arizona's winning that. Like, I don't think they're re-upping him this year, right?
Yep.
And honestly, I don't think they should, because half the point in a quarterback on his rookie contract is that rookie contract. The sooner you give that away, the worse for you as an organization, right? Not just because you lose the value of that year one, but you also increase the potential that it's a Carson Wentz or a Jared Goff, and in a couple of years' time, you regret it. So... like, what's the downside in hanging on for a year? The only downside is you make a quarterback a little bit butthurt. And he already appears to be that. So you can't make it worse. So screw it. Just say no.
This is where I struggle. The human element. They're not just They're not just chess pieces. They're not just...
You've like flipped on this. You were Mr. No touchy-feely, and now you're all like, oh, you can't like... You can't leave him hanging.
Players are starred like... kids these days. Just blame the kids.
Uh-huh.
Like, dude,
he's going to go on Instagram. He's going to delete you again.
Could you imagine? Like, what's going to happen when Gen Z's, you know, up for contracts? Dude, it's going to be crazy. I'm just kidding. I'm not... as a Xennial, I'm not going to sit here and look down upon the next generation. I'm just saying every generation has to be handled a little bit differently. Huh. Right?
You know how much money the Cardinals have right now in cap space?
Negative what?
I only raise it because it's a funny number.
What's that?
They have $2,186.
Really?
Yeah.
What can you do with that?
You could probably sign me.
That's a triple A salary right there.
I mean, look, as a signing bonus.
I made $2,150.
I'll take it as a signing bonus, you know? I'm gonna need some more incentives, right?
Yeah. The likely to be earned.
Right. But if you want to hand me a contract right now that gets me $2,186 on signing, I'll take it.
Yeah, so there's not a ton of space right now.
But again, you know, that number is effectively meaningless. Like, they can free up $80 million worth of stuff by restructures and things.
The quarterbacks that you've invested in that have struggled in that making it worthwhile environment is like a Carson Wentz.
Yeah.
Is Kyler going down this road where he's a little sensitive? The things that are coming out about him as a leader, is that just coming from the team?
I don't know.
Is there truth there?
To me.
Or is it like once he gets paid, you're good? He'll be fine.
To me, everything that's come out has made me less inclined to pay him, not more. Like, if that was
Agreed.
The strategy, you know, let's cause a fuss, right? Let's start making some noise. Let's start creating a bit of a, you know, a bit of a furore, and then that'll make them pay us. And then we're good. If that was the strategy, to me, it was terrible. Because if I'm the Cardinals and I'm looking at this payout, every single thing that they've done so far has made me less inclined to pay him money now than it would have been if he just shut the hell up.
But the problem is, When he comes out and says something and you're less inclined to pay him, it's not like his value goes down.
No, but it just means
his value is $40 million or zero.
Right, but you don't need to do it now. That's what I'm saying, right? It just means that this has always been about time scale. The Cardinals want to do this next year. They want to do it this year. And all I'm saying is everything they've done to try and make it this year, if I'm the Cardinals, has made me less inclined, not more inclined. So job number one is you sit in your hands and do nothing in terms of a Kyler Murray extension for
True.
At least another year.
All right, so we're doing nothing. He'll deal with it. Now, looking at the current roster, the receiving core, which was pretty cool last year, right? A.J. Green comes in, plays better than he did the previous year. Christian Kirk had best year of his career. Pretty much has that 2/3 option. Both of those guys are free agents.
Mm-hmm.
All of your tight ends are free agents. Max Williams coming off his injury. Zach Ertz. You have no tight ends. You have one starter to replace on the offensive line. Both running backs are free agents. Every skill position, the only skill position players that you have are DeAndre Hopkins.
Good one.
Rondale Moore. That's good.
Yep.
Antoine Wesley and Andy Isabella.
They have given Andy Isabella permission to seek a trade.
He is. And as much as I loved Andy Isabella, I can't imagine the trade value is high.
What do you think they get back for him?
Release papers.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay.
Release papers.
I see.
So if Isabella hasn't emerged to this point, yeah, maybe he does next time, but I'll sign him and John Ross all day and see what happens. What if I had both of those guys in camp battling it out for wide receiver 6 on my team? That's right. I'm carrying 6 receivers no matter what. They'd be in camp for me every single year. Defensively, Chandler Jones, Robert Alford, as far as starters hitting free agency. It's not a ton to replace, but you also want to upgrade that unit. I still don't have a ton of faith in the cornerback room there. So, I mean, there's work to do in Arizona. But pretty much receiver, tight end, running back all need to be addressed here.
Yeah, and receiver, I think, is like receiver / tight end would be first and foremost. Like, what made that team so dangerous last year was when they had all those healthy receivers and you couldn't cover them all. Rondale Moore, DeAndre Hopkins, good start. But you definitely need that second major option so that you can't just clamp down on DeAndre Hopkins. And particularly in this offense that doesn't move receivers around, right? It's easier to do that than it is in other offenses where you have to suddenly, like on the fly, figure out where Davante Adams is and then roll the coverage in his direction, right? And he can be in the slot. When it's new Hopkins, you know where he's going to be. You can design the entire game plan around knowing that he's going to be at left wide receiver basically every snap. So I think for the Cardinals, more than basically any other team, that means you need that other guy on the other side to be dangerous enough to win one-on-one. And right now there's nobody capable of doing that unless you're projecting a significant leap in terms of Rondale Moore's development.
So, I mean, they're going to have to stitch it together in free agency, because I think Christian Kirk's going to be out of their price range. Somebody's going to pay Kirk. Maybe bring A.J. Green back on a similar deal. But again, that's not like taking it to the next level. That's just kind of getting back to where you were.
Not even.
And definitely not even necessarily. You have pick number 23. There could be some value there as far as receiver goes for the Cardinals. But this isn't exactly, not to compare Kyler to Carson Wentz again, it's not exactly the same situation, but Kyler just had his best year at things that he wasn't great at before, thrown at the intermediate level and all that stuff, and it coincided directly with the best year that he had all these playmakers, right? Now, you could say it's natural progression, and it's natural roster building progression, but I don't want to see what happens if you don't give him that, right? Like, just like I don't want to see Josh Allen without one of the best receiving groups in the NFL. I don't want to see that. I don't want Dallas to not have one of the best receiving groups when they did, right? And say, oh, here's a little bit more pressure on you, Dak, elevate these other guys. So I think Arizona's got to go all out on this group. Maybe you could get Max Williams back cheap at tight end. Ertz was a nice addition late, but he's not the dude you're building around or anything. So I think within the draft, receiver, tight end, I mean, that could be 2-3 of your first picks right away. Maybe doubling up on all those positions, even after drafting Rondale last year. Because I don't think Rondale's a two. He's your gimmicky type player, right?
I think he can be. The question is, do they see him that way? Like, I can definitely see a world where Rondale develops into a two and has this much bigger role, but you need
still
to,
such like a small catch radius for the even yeah. for like a, like an Uber slot receiver and all that.
But you
stuff.
Need to project him to that. Like, if they're not even if that's not even on the table, then it's kind of pointless talking about it. But I think there's a world where that could be the case.
They got to get creative in free agency. I'm bringing in Will Fuller. Taking that Will Fuller shot. What? Will Fuller and DeAndre Hopkins, get them back together. I think I gave Fuller to the Cardinals last year and every other team. Right? Take a shot on Fuller.
I don't love the tight end group in free agency, but given how successful Zach Ertz was, if they can get him back, they should absolutely try and do that. Max Williams was doing well before he went down. Like, if they could get one of those guys back, I think that would actually be quite important. And it doesn't feel like either one of them should break the bank. Receiver is trickier. I think that's definitely an area where they want to hit the draft. But again, if you can find a lower down guy, Russell Gage is another one of those guys that feels perfect for this team. A guy that can be, he can replace what you lost in Christian Kirk and AJ Green at the same time. Again, one player.
Yeah, I think he's good. I don't know if T.Y. Hilton is going to play anymore. I think Hilton was another guy that I paired with the Cardinals last year, where if he does, he's 32, like on a one-year deal, as you're trying to look to the future at receiver, I think T.Y. Hilton could do some damage in this offense as well. So I think you got to explore those low-end-ish free agent options in receiver and attack it in the draft. And tight end's not great anywhere. I mean, it's not a featured position in this offense, but the Ertz addition was really nice, as you said, having that middle of the field option. I would try to get Max Williams back, though. I would definitely try to get him back.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly don't even think it matters a huge amount which one you get back. I mean, obviously only one of them's coming off an injury, so that might sway you. But if you can get one of those guys back in the building, I think that's an important thing.
And mentioned before, cornerback. So running back, it's another spot where Chase Edmonds is a free agent. James Conner is a free agent after he signed a one-year, $1.75 million contract last year and had an 82 grade, was fantastic. Do that again. Find the next running back that you could sign for under $2 million a year and put him in this offense where they've done a pretty good job of creating efficient runners in this offense. You have Kyler with the run threat. You have a decent offensive line, a good scheme that generally puts the backs. Like, just don't pay backs. Replace them.
Yeah.
The same way they did with James Conner last year. Grab the last guys available in free agency and make them good. Fine. Cornerback needs to be addressed, though, too. They got pretty good play out of Robert Alford last year. Marco Wilson drafted, had some, showed some promise, but I don't think you want to roll into next year with him as a starter. Like, they need two corners. Malcolm Butler retired on them last year, and I think that hurt. their depth. It didn't hurt them as much as I thought it would defensively. They did a nice job hanging in there, but man, it's still a place that needs to be addressed.
I spent all last year thinking that eventually the cornerback thing was going to come back and bite them in the ass, and it didn't, but I'm still not convinced that it won't next year. You know what I mean?
Agreed, and I don't know that we mentioned for other teams, you know, Carlton Davis and J.C. Jackson. I don't think they need to break the bank for a number one corner, but if you're talking short term, get a Steven Nelson in there on the cheap that could play well in that system. Bryce Callahan. I mean, Callahan would be a little redundant to, I think, Byron Murphy playing in the slot, but this is the wrong Brian Allen here.
On the other hand, if they have somehow discovered the secret to getting good cornerback play from not good corners, then they've, like, stolen a march on the rest of the NFL and should exploit that.
Maybe Dante Jackson could fit there. I mean, think about these guys look like they're upgrades over what they've had. Yeah, so I'd look at that top 75 or so free agent board for us at PFF. I can send a note to Austin if you want to talk here. We got the wrong image here.
Hmm. Okay, so our solution for Arizona is bringing back at least one of Max Williams and Zach Ertz. I really like Russell Gage being added to this offense, still hitting the draft.
Gage, Max Williams, and Ertz. Yeah. Good.
I mean, one of Ertz or Max Williams.
Whoever the remaining running back is.
And Gage. I mean, running back.
Or a fifth rounder.
Yes. Running back, I don't care. Draft a guy in the fourth, fifth round.
We'll mention running back once or twice on the show.
Draft him in the mid rounds. Profit. And then we need a corner from somewhere. And again, that could be the draft. That could be free agency. They don't have a ton of money to spend, but they have enough room that they can bring in somebody like that.
All right. Fixed?
Yeah.
On to the Rams. Let's fix the Los Angeles Rams.
Okay.
They're perfect. Well done.
Hmm.
Super Bowl champs?
A lot of people leaving, though.
It sounds like they're close to bringing back Von Miller.
Von Miller's playing this well. He's doing a good job of his own, you know, publicist slash agent.
Tweeting, maybe. Yeah. Maybe I want to go back. Denver, maybe I want to go back to Denver. Denver. Now they got Russ.
That's what I'm saying. He's doing a good job. Way better than Kyler's agent.
I mean, part of the Rams' strategy, too, again, is they get a lot of comp picks because they have let players walk.
Yeah.
Right? As much as they said, we're not picking in the first round, they've let other veterans walk, picked up comp picks. That's how they draft a lot. Vaughn would get you a fifth.
Yeah. They're in this world where the Bucks were last year of the draw of running it back is really powerful. Like, players individually to be part of a team that just won the Super Bowl and has a shot of repeating and creating history and or just – you know, the way, like, naturally the way everybody's brain works in terms of the NFL, it's like everything is the same as a year ago, only whatever you do differently now. Right?
Yeah, right.
So if you're every player there is like, we were the best team in the NFL last year, so we're the favorites to win the Super Bowl again.
Right, so we're definitely going to win it.
So, like, this is the best spot. Like, nowhere has a better chance of winning a Super Bowl than this team right here. So, yes, I'll re-sign. Give me the document. I'll sign it right now. So there is a decent chance that they get to bring back a lot of these guys the way the Bucs did a year ago. I mean, nobody's ever run it back the way Tampa Bay did, but it wouldn't shock me at all if they figured out a way of bringing back OBJ and Von Miller and maybe, you know, one of those offensive linemen that's going to hit free agency and, you know, maybe even a Darius Williams. Like, it's not beyond the realms of possibility.
The Rams this year have 8 draft picks, 5 of which are comp picks.
Mm-hmm.
They have pick number 99. That's their first pick, a compensatory pick. They don't have their first real pick until 173.
Sure.
Which is great. But you're right. I mean, unfortunately, the OBJ injury from a team building standpoint for the Rams might actually work in their favor if his market's going to be suppressed just a little bit.
Right.
So they could get OBJ back. Don't forget, Robert Woods is coming back off of injury.
Robert Woods is coming back. In theory, Tutu Atwell will be a part going forward.
And remember last year at this time, it was like, okay, they've got Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods. They drafted Tutu Atwell.
Yep.
And they signed DeSean Jackson. It was like, all right, yeah, this is PFF NFL podcast type of stuff here.
Mm-hmm.
Flood the field with playmakers. And even though DeSean Jackson didn't work, well, OBJ did you know, for their run. So bring him back on the cheap. I think you can do some stuff there. The other part that's going to be really important, they're probably going to have to replace 3 starters on the offensive line. Have we heard anything from Whitworth yet?
I was just thinking that. I haven't. I think we just assumed he was going to retire, and then there hasn't been any talk of that, right?
Yeah. Can you text him or something and just find out if we should talk about him?
Probably not right now.
Anyway, Brian Allen at center and Austin Corbett, right guard. They're both hitting free agency. The other part is, if Whitworth comes back, David Edwards at left guard and Rob Havenstein at right tackle, all those guys only have 1 year left on their contract.
Whitworth is still weighing retirement, but he's staying in shape, working out with Note Boom and David Edwards.
That's me, minus the staying in shape part.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yep. Not that 2023 might matter here. Like, zero offensive linemen are under contract for 2023 for the Rams, including backups. Sorry, Drake Jackson is under contract for 2023.
Great.
So with those eight draft picks starting at number 99 overall, they probably have to draft three offensive linemen. And this is was part of their strategy that got them to this place.
Or, like, one of the really important run-it-back type of deals would be if you could re-sign Joseph Noteboom, who, okay, very limited sample size, but in a few games starting for Whitworth late in the year, it looked like he was a really good left tackle.
He hits free agency as,
yeah,
you know.
So if you can get him back, that's potentially, like, an absolute steal for them.
I assume the market looks at Noteboom as a sixth offensive lineman, so yeah, bring
but
him back.
For, like,
yeah.
But based off a couple of games, right, the Rams could easily project him. Like, if he's our starter for Whitworth, if we get a seamless transition from Andrew Whitworth, the left tackle, to Joseph Noteboom, and he actually ends up being decent, that is, like, that's a game changer for them.
Part of the Rams strategy, finding David Edwards and Brian Allen as in the middle rounds as starters, making a trade for Austin Corbett, the beautiful third-year breakout player that hasn't done anything, you know, making a trade. So putting together that offensive line with that strategy in mind, it's like time to execute that again for the Rams. So it's time to get those first contract offensive linemen again. So that's going to probably have to happen.
Noteboom
in the draft.
Basically, he played, you know, right tackle or swing tackle in the past, and then this season he ends up with four games, essentially, where he played a decent number of snaps at left tackle. Sorry, three games at left tackle, one of which, zero pressures allowed across 36 pass-blocking snaps. The next one, one pressure allowed, a hurry, across 15. And the third of which, in the playoffs, one hurry allowed, one pressure, one hurry, from 42 pass-blocking snaps.
Pretty good.
So, yeah, again, look, it's ridiculously small sample sizes. It's 2.5 games, right? But these are basically the first 2.5 games where he was allowed to play at his college position and looked good doing it. So if the Rams can convince him to, you know, hey, Joe, come back.
Well, he might be their starter. He might be their starter for Whitworth, somewhat on the cheap.
If they can convince him to run it back and sign back at the team for, like, nothing, it's potentially a really big deal for them.
Did we have a projected contract on Noteboom? Let me search. I'm searching over at PFF.com, all of our free agents. Our free agent board, our list here. Yeah, Brad projected him at 1 year, $4 million for Noteboom. So give him a shot.
If you get him back for that, all four.
Ahead of Okorafor, who just made a ton of money.
Does that happen?
Oh, is potentially going to make a ton of money. We're not supposed to know that?
I don't know.
He's projected 4 years, $10 million. So that's what I'm looking at.
Yeah.
Chukwuma Okorafor from the Steelers, projected to make 4 years, $10 million on PFF.com. By the way, all PFF subscriptions, 25% off. Using the promo code NFLPOD. Between that and then sending me your screenshot of the Daily and the NFL Podcast that you subscribe to both, you have opportunities to get in on our PFF subscriptions here at PFF.com, either 25% off with NFLPOD or send me those screenshots and you could win the free PFF Edge subscription. What else for the Rams here? Cornerback two is a question for the second straight year. They let Troy Hill walk last year. Darius Williams hits free agency this year. Is it next man up, David Long? Or is it trying to bring Darius Williams back? System familiarity. I think somebody in the chat mentioned Rasul Douglas. That could be an intriguing one. Similar system, Packers and Rams. That's where Douglas had that success. Again, I don't know where Douglas's market is going to be.
Yeah.
But that could be an intriguing one for the Rams as well, free agency.
I mean, honestly, the Rams have the same playbook as Tampa Bay last year. Like, their priority should be bringing back every single player on this roster and trying to keep it intact, because their capacity to replace players that they don't bring back is not huge, right? They don't have a ton of money to spend, and they don't have draft picks beyond, you know, the low rounds, which isn't to say they won't get contributors with those picks, but it's very difficult to project who they would be. You know what I mean?
Did Eric Weddle re-retire?
Yeah.
He's back to the Peloton?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Just making sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they've done, again, the Rams have done a really good job of finding starters at linebacker, at safety, in the middle rounds. Got to continue that. Continue to get the lower, I mean, get the offensive linemen in the middle rounds, get some defensive depth in the middle rounds, and just keep that team building strategy. Go get them, Rams. And Matthew Stafford, Super Bowl champion. Run it back with him.
Mm.
Sound good?
They're also going to be extending Stafford.
Yeah, he's only got 1 year left.
Redoing his contract.
Which
might actually free up a decent chunk of cap space.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, they'll need to because they're third lowest cap space. The cap space numbers as of right now, it's like all the top teams in the NFC plus the Vikings.
Yeah.
So it's the Bucs, Vikings, Rams, Saints, and Packers. It's all the teams that had a top quarterback or whatever and you know made a run, and then the Vikings, who had a decent quarterback and didn't make a run.
Mm.
Just saying. All right, we fixed the Rams.
Yeah.
They're already doing great. Keep it up. Keep up the great work.
That was easy.
San Francisco 49ers before we fix the Seahawks.
Uh-oh.
So the Niners, starting with trading Jimmy G?
Yes.
He's out.
Yeah. To the Colts, right?
I mean, one thing the Rams also need to do is promote Zach Robinson to call the plays. Okay. And then one thing the Niners need to do is promote Bobby Slowik to play caller. Just forget about McVay. Forget about Shanahan. Let the PFFers call plays and run the show.
Okay.
Right?
Sure.
Don't you think?
I mean, yeah.
That's what I would do.
All right.
Anyone with PFF experience should be a play caller.
Yeah.
Myself included.
We're getting rid of Jimmy G to the Colts, right?
Yeah.
And that's where he's going, presumably. The Colts are now in a situation where they have no quarterbacks. Jimmy G is the next one up in terms of availability.
They don't have a first rounder to give us.
Yeah. But you don't need one because it's Jimmy G. What's
Jimmy
his value?
Second rounder?
Yeah. So that makes sense, right? Jimmy G to the Colts, done.
And I'll put Trey Lance in as starter.
Yep.
All right. Building around Trey Lance.
Now you need some guards.
You do need some guards because Laken Tomlinson hits free agency. Daniel Brunskill hits free agency. They did draft Aaron Banks last year with an eye toward this, I think. I do love that as a team building strategy when you have players, you know, looking a year ahead, right? So presumably Banks will step in as a starter. He didn't look like the best scheme fit, but all right, let's just say he's going to take one of the starting spots. Got to go somewhere else in free agency there. Could bring Brunskill back. I don't know if he's going to make a ton of money there.
Sure.
And he's been pretty good there. Tomlinson will probably get paid.
Yeah.
Because there are – the Dolphins will probably look at him. Guys that are – people that are familiar with him or run the Shanahan tree, Tomlinson's really emerged after a slow start to his career with Detroit. He's become a pretty good guard.
Trent Williams' grade is hilarious in that it's actually a darker shade of blue. It's so high. Like, I didn't realize there was a darker shade of blue.
George Kittle and Deebo Samuel's really good blue grades on the depth chart we're looking at. They look good.
Like, you cross 90.
But Trent Williams looks much darker.
You cross 90, you hit that, you know, elite blue grade, right? It's a scale from a heat scale from red, which is bad, up to green, which is good. But then when you hit elite, it's that blue chip, you know, special color. I didn't realize there was an extra darker ocean depth blue that only Trent Williams resides in.
You need to pay attention, man, because there it is. Roger Saffold's free at guard.
Bring he's also Saffold. Like doesn't really have a shoulder and stuff.
Yeah, he's getting older.
I'm not sure that's the best solution.
He's getting older. So you need starting guards there. But your playmakers are intact. We got to re-up Deebo soon. He's got 1 year left. McGlinchey. Got to re-up McGlinchey soon. The old man, he might be over the hill, though.
Hmm.
He's you know getting into his 40s now. What was that? Somebody, credit to one of our listeners that tagged us. As McGlinchey was talking about how he loves Matchbox 20.
Right.
Who, by the way, I celebrate their entire catalog. Big Matchbox 20.
Entire catalog.
Entire catalog.
I mean, some light stuff wasn't great.
Yeah, I've stopped recently.
Yeah.
But their first three albums, at least, celebrated their entire catalog for a while.
There's some banging tunes there.
So I can relate to McGlinchey. He's just a good Gen Xer like us. Old millennial, whatever you want to call it. That's McGlinchey.
Hmm.
You know, the fact that he's outlasted like Andrew Whitworth is impressive. Like, we talk about Whitworth a lot, being 40, playing tackle. McGlinchey's outlasted him, presumably, if Whitworth
retires.
You would
think.
But McGlinchey's, it's impressive what he's done for a guy who went to college at the same time as us in the early 2000s.
Yeah. Technically only 27, turns out.
Oh. We're not going to keep up this shtick that McGlinchey's pushing 40 like we
are?
I mean,
we can keep up the shtick. I think it's worth pointing out that he is, in fact, only.
Oh, we should probably tell our listeners, for real, McGlinchey's not that old.
Yeah.
Anyway, the offense is pretty well intact here.
Sure. They'd be a great team to snag a guy like Austin Corbett and try and steal somebody off a division rival in
like
addition
Corbett.
To solidifying a guard spot for you.
Yeah. Try to bring Raheem Mostert back at running back.
Okay.
Because speed. I want all the speed on this offense. Right?
All
right. Give me all the speed with Trey Lance running zone read stuff.
If it doesn't cost much, fine. Like this team, more than any other in the NFL, should understand how much you don't need to pay running backs anything, and yet for some reason they're the team that goes out of their way to throw resources at running back.
So biggest focus here, I think, is going to be defensive line depth, but the real biggest focus is corner. The entire secondary, really. Jaquiski Tartt hits free agency. Jason Verrett is free once again. And K'Wan Williams, their slot corner. So only have Emmanuel Mosley and Jimmy Ward, the two out of the five starters. Ambry Thomas did a decent job filling in last year at corner as a rookie. Maybe he competes for a starting spot, but you got to get better at corner, I think, if you're the Niners. They did a nice job overall last year. I thought it'd be much worse, but I think that's the weak spot right now.
Yeah. And remember, they don't have a first-round pick because they traded it away to Miami for Trey Lance. So, job number one is make sure Trey Lance is good because you traded the farm for him. So they don't have a first-round pick to address that. I think you could snag a guy like Austin Corbett for moderate money. What do we got a projected answer right now? 4 years, $10 million a year on average, which seems fair for a guy like that. Plug him in as one starter, and then you could probably try and find a starting corner in free agency and then leave yourself with whatever you can find in the draft.
Who are you drafting again? What'd you say?
I said they don't have a first round pick.
Did you say anything in the second round?
I haven't got to the second round.
Okay, yet. Good. I zoned out for a minute.
Nice.
I was thinking about how we ran into John Lynch the other night. And we're like, hey, good to see you, John.
Yeah.
And he's probably going to call us up after the show.
He thanked us for everything that PFF does.
He did.
I don't know if he'll remember a single word from that conversation. The man seemed like
certainly
he'd taken a drink or two on board.
Yeah. I was trying to get that story in without sounding like a loser. Like, oh, John Lynch, thanks for great.
Yeah. How did you manage it? Did it work?
No, you did well.
Okay.
I think, I set you up to do it.
Nice. So
running into John.
It turns out my strategy for the 49ers this offseason is essentially to target Rams players and take players away from them.
Darius
and
Williams
to you at the same time.
Austin Corbett, get him in there.
So Austin Corbett, Darius Williams, according to our contract projections, they're both in the $10, $11 million a year range. Snag them both.
Casey
Rams
Hayward,
are worse, you're better.
I think Casey Hayward.
Ooh.
Right? Because if you're the Niners, you can win this year, right? You're in the mix to win. Casey Hayward feels like one of those one-year type of deals. Because you have so much, I think you need multiple resources at corner. You're going to want to attack it in the draft, get low-end free agents, maybe a high-end free agent, but I think Hayward would be a good one-year option there. If you're going to replace K'Wan Williams in the slot, that's where Bryce Callahan could come in. It's been one of the better. He didn't have a great year last year, but he's had multiple years of really good play in the slot. Bryce Callahan could be nice. And that's the – is this the wrong – what is this? Yeah, we just have a bug in the free agent board that is putting the wrong Brian Allen up there.
Great.
Not the center, the corner.
We should definitely highlight that to all the listeners.
Well, that'll get them on the page, right? Go check out the bug on the free agent
page. Go check out the mistake.
Clickbait.
Free agent.
Clickbait. Okay. Everything else is right. And the board's pretty cool. Shows the player, shows their projected contract, season grade, their war ranking over the last couple of years. It's the only place we show war.
Maybe the 49ers will be in the perfect spot to grab Tariq Woolen, the freakish combine superstar.
Oh.
With the insane workout numbers. Like, maybe that's the zone for him.
I like Woolen there. I would take him second. My issue with that, though, is I would rather take him if I'm the team that has other first-round picks. But like, if he's my first pick at 61, and then you don't pick again until 93. And they do have 8 total picks, the Niners, so they have volume. They're just only 2 in the top 100. Woolen's a little risky for me, maybe, if I'm the Niners at 61. But other teams that have better, higher draft capital, I like that better.
Okay.
It's an intriguing name, though. What else about – the other thing to fix the Niners is we're going to run the ball a lot more with Trey Lance and just run more misdirection. Schematically, we're going to build around his skill set just to make sure.
Okay.
Just throwing that in there that that's happening.
Oh.
What else needs to happen?
The 49 – would you not love to see in this offense that has Kyle Juszczyk, George Kittle, Brandon Ayuk, Debo Samuel, Juwan Jennings, these weird freakish athletes. You see where I'm going with this?
Yeah.
Yeah? Would you not love to see
– Patterson.
Cordarrelle Patterson
yes.
in this backfield.
Yes. Do it. Make it happen.
Uh-huh.
Just pay him running back money, not receiver money.
You text Bobby right now. They need to go after Cordarrelle Patterson.
You guys
and stuff him in that backfield and just watch magic happen.
Yeah, you talk to the people here. I'm going to talk.
It's like the, you know, the Infinity Stones, right? When you collect all of them, suddenly like half the world explodes. Like when the 49ers get all of those ridiculous athletes that don't exist anywhere else in the league, put them all in the same formation at the same time.
Yes.
Boom. The defense just evaporates into dust, and you walk in for a touchdown every play.
Two R's in Cordero.
Oh, God. I can only stall for so much time. You actually need to be able to type out a guy's name in the time
it's
I'm
close
giving
enough.
You.
I got it. Yeah. I got it.
You should have just put CPA4.
No, he's not that well known. He is not that well known yet.
Of course he is.
He is not. Cordarrelle Patterson going to the Niners.
Hmm.
Fixed.
Done.
We only have one last team to fix.
Excellent.
It's a challenging one. It's the Seahawks.
Hmm. Well, don't worry. They've got Jamal Adams.
When you stack up the Adams trade and the Wilson trade, it doesn't look great.
It doesn't. I don't know why. Like, why it doesn't, but why would you do that? Like, it's not like they're connected.
No, they're not. Because people are trying to say, like, over the last 3 years, here are the moves that Seattle made. Yeah,
but like,
this,
there are some trades where that makes sense, right? Where one sort of led on to the other one directly, and it kind of makes sense to net them out, right? Like Carson Wentz. Trading for Carson Wentz and then trading away Carson Wentz, I understand why you would net out that draft capital and sort of this is what it cost, essentially, for a year of Carson Wentz. But like, here's a random trade Seattle made for Jamal Adams, and then a little bit later they trade away Russell Wilson. Here's what it nets out at. Like, okay, but that they're completely disconnected.
Yeah, I mean, it's just you're evaluating the regime.
Which we were already, like, there's no point in sort of highlighting it to say, oh, well, it turns out the Jamal Adams, breaking news, the Jamal Adams trade was bad for the Seahawks. Oh, really? Well, I'm glad we finally settled on that because I was confused up until now. Now that I've seen the Russell Wilson trade, all of a sudden the Jamal Adams trade has become clear that it was terrible.
I mean, the moves have to be made, evaluated in isolation. Necessary move for the Seahawks to move on from Russ and start the rebuild.
Necessary?
Yeah.
No.
So was it the right move?
I could see an argument for it. I mean, I think, again, it was the first time where I think this was even on the table.
Yeah.
Where for the first time, Seattle would have been looking at this and saying, you know what? I don't know if we can win the way we are right now with Russell Wilson. Like, Russ might have been getting pissed off for a while, right? Just slowly seething with behind his mask of, like, bland pleasantness, you know? Just getting more and more bitter behind the facade that he puts in front of the camera for, like, years. But for the first time, I think
behind
Seattle...
his facade of bland.
But for the first time, I think Seattle might have been looking at this and saying, you know what, if an offer comes in, it might actually make sense to take it. And it did. So they did. So I think, yeah, look, it was going to be hard to put it back together with Russell Wilson there. It's going to be hard to put it back together without Russell Wilson there, but at least you've got some draft picks and you start over. It's a full rebuild.
So going into yesterday when they made this trade for Russ, they were not going to pick until 42. And so they would have had 5 picks total after picking 3 times last year. Now they're up to 8 draft picks. They have 9. 41 and 42 now, so 3 picks in the top 42. And like I said, the 8 total. So it's a completely different world for Seattle. Their first-round draft picks over the last decade are not great when they've selected in the first round.
Sure.
They've also used their first-rounders not only to trade for Jamal Adams, but to trade for guys like Percy Harvin, for like guys like Jimmy Graham. You know, they were the original, maybe, Rams, you know, give up the picks. Strategy.
F10 picks?
Yes. Give up the pick strategy that didn't pay off, really, for the Seahawks. But given their history now with Russell Wilson and how much they wanted to run the ball and play defense and all that stuff, are they looking at Malik Willis at 9 and building that run game around his skill set and playing their type of ball? Because it's a fascinating roster, Sam. Do they have one of the best wide receiver duos in the NFL. Rumors that Tyler Lockett and his over $17 million per year contract are on the market. But you have DK and Tyler Lockett as a starting point. You only have 2 starters returning on the offensive line. The defense has not been great over the last few years. There's a lot of holes here that need to be filled, but it's got to be, you know, what does this rebuild look like in Seattle, starting with that pick at number nine?
You know the way we sort of – the sliding door stuff of, like, what if Bill Belichick never had Tom Brady, right? What would his career look like? Like, yeah. How much is he a product? Like, start thinking about Pete Carroll minus Russell Wilson for a second, right? Obviously, you've got USC Pete Carroll and stuff, but you've got the Pete Carroll that was in the NFL the first time around, didn't go so great. Then you've got a couple of years before they basically stumbled ass backwards into Russell Wilson, which is like the last year of Matt Hasselbeck. Okay, fine. Then you've got, let's roll with Tavares Jackson as the answer, right?
Yeah.
Didn't go so well. Those are both 7 and 9 years. And then you've got 2012, which was supposed to be, wasn't that Matt Flynn? Wasn't
Matt
he supposed
Flynn.
To be the starter?
Matt Flynn.
Off the back of like one game where he lit up.
But for reasonable money. It wasn't break the bank type of money. They didn't like say, Matt Flynn's the guy.
It was pretty big money.
I mean, it's big money for Matt Flynn.
Big money for anybody.
Matt Flynn stealing money. Not like Bruce stole money, but definitely stealing some money.
I mean, Matt Flynn stole quite a lot of money.
Not at Chase Daniel level.
Did you see somebody tweet him about this recently? So like he made a comment about anything, right? And somebody was like, hey, remember that time you got handed like a giant sum of money and sucked for the? And he was like, yeah, that was awesome.
That was awesome, yeah.
But like, so the plan, the Carroll endorsed game plan was like Matt Flynn, based off this one game where he torched Detroit for the Packers, is going to be the starter and the answer. And then, thankfully, Russell Wilson got drafted in the third round, and it turns out Russell Wilson is a hell of a lot better than Matt Flynn, so Flynn never got the chance to show that he was going to be the...
But they deserve credit for, like, John Schneider deserves credit for that.
Carroll doesn't?
I mean, they make the decisions
also
together.
Again, like, how much credit do they deserve for a guy they drafted in the third round?
They loved
him. Who wasn't supposed to start.
They loved him as a first-round player.
Did they?
Yes.
This is like... Like, our frenemy of the show, Bill Polian, I had a first-round grade on Tom Brady back in the day.
Oh, really? I don't believe Bill.
Really, Bill?
I believe.
You think they had a first-round pick? You think they had a first-round grade on Russ and were prepared
and
to let him last until the third
they
round?
They played the draft. They played patiently.
I think that's staggering bullshit. There's not a chance.
Yeah, they did.
If you had a first-round grade on a quarterback, you are never letting that
Bruce Irvin in the first.
Sit to the third.
Bobby Wagner in the second. And then Russ in the third.
They
played the draft.
I will see an argument that says I will let a first-round graded quarterback slip to the second. There's no way you're letting him slip to the third if you have a first-round grade.
That's called intel, man. You know. You know what the league's doing. You know where the league values that guy.
You're making that risk.
It was too short. 10 years ago, the league hated short quarterbacks.
Anyway,
he's 5'11".
My point is simply, right, that Russell Wilson has all of a sudden propped up this like history of disastrous game plans at quarterback, which they now have to go back to.
Was it you talking about this? There is this world where every time they put the ball in Russ's hands, they didn't win a ton. When they reeled it back in and they just worked, you know, run game, play action, they did win more, and it coincided with the defense and all that stuff. Maybe it was Eric who mentioned this. There is this world where the Pete Carroll era feels like when you put more on the quarterback, you win less.
Yeah.
When you do less with the quarterback, you win more. And it's a bit of a – it's not real necessarily, but that's what they're feeling.
It's complicated. Like, it's not as simple as people want to make it out as, right, which is, oh, just let Russ cook. And it's not as simple as the narrative that, hey, when they put more on Russ's plate, it doesn't work. It is this complicated relationship where – they haven't been as successful when they've turned the ball over to Russ overall. He's not the kind of quarterback that exists in this world where you can just have him pass 50 times a game and everything's rosy. He plays the game in a unique style that creates certain issues within an offense. And generally, if he has to pass the ball, you can't run the same game plan that you have for Patrick Mahomes or Tom Brady with Russell Wilson. Now, that doesn't mean you can't also lean on him the same kind of way. It's just a different style or scheme that has to function that way. And I don't think Seattle ever figured out how that relationship works. Now, it's going to be interesting to see if Denver can, right, with Nathaniel Hackett there. Like, can they craft a game plan that maximizes what Russ does without taking the ball out of his hands? But Seattle could never quite figure out that balance.
So I think Seattle's... I think they might be in the Malik Willis camp here. because you could build this run game around them and make the same play that the Niners are making. Build this run, like, you could build an incredible run game around Malik Willis and develop that arm talent and all that. Rebuild your offensive line to run block because they've been trying to do that for years anyway. Dwayne Brown, both tackles, Dwayne Brown and Brandon Shell are free agents. Centers, Kyle Fuller, Ethan Pochich, both free agents. So you got a lot of work to do on the offensive line that hasn't been good in recent years anyway.
Yeah, your line sucks.
Any years. If you're going to build more of a run-first attack, Tyler Lockett probably does become more expendable, right, at receiver. And if they release Bobby Wagner. On the same day, they traded Russ and released Bobby Wagner. Almost friend of the show. And so the same day, like, it's a whole new world in Seattle. Steve Largent's not walking through that door.
He's not.
No one else. It's just a whole new group of players.
Nor should he.
I'm fascinated to see this because I think Seattle has not been good from a roster team building standpoint the last few years.
I mean, they've done what the Vikings did. They started earlier, right? They've been deteriorating since the Legion of Boom.
They haven't been good in recent years. However, this is the same group from John Schneider and Pete Carroll that got this thing going. You know, maybe they work better as underdogs, right? Maybe they work better they don't have the quarter. I don't know. I'm just saying. I'm interested to see what this looks like. I'm interested to see where they go because
maybe they work.
They're starting over again
as underdogs.
Yeah, maybe they do.
Okay. Yeah.
Somebody said it'd be the most Pete Carroll thing ever to trade Russ just because he's bringing bad energy or something like that. Rather than his actual on-field play. I don't know. We'll see where it goes. We didn't think this was going to happen because Pete Carroll's getting old.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's embracing it.
Or maybe they're
just building around Drew Lock.
70-whatever-year-old Pete Carroll is prepared to go in like a full hardcore rebuild and tear this thing down and start over. Particularly, as I said, it's not like they have a great record of, you know, consistently making smart moves. Outside, they basically had one stellar draft where they got all these guys in the first place, and they had Russell Wilson to lean on forever. Outside of that, it's like, you know, all right.
On top of all this, both starting corners, Sidney Jones and DJ Reed, who had pretty good seasons last year. We said, hey, look, this defense hasn't been good, but they got decent play out of those guys last year. They both hit free agency. Ugo Amadi and Jamal Adams are left in the secondary. Wagner's gone, who we mentioned. That leaves Jordan Brooks, Cody Barton. They've at least tried to invest at linebacker the last couple of years to get ready for this. It's just a full rebuild in Seattle. So what is the answer here? No, under every rock, we're searching for a quarterback. So we're in that boat, just like the Colts, just like the Steelers.
So are they making a move for a quarterback before the draft? Because they've been talked about in this bucket of, is there something else to come here? Are they going to be in the sweepstakes for one of these veterans?
They can't be. This roster's not good. I mean, if they weren't winning with Russ, they're not winning with the next tier of quarterback.
Okay.
Right? They're not winning with Garoppolo. I mean, they're Garoppolo and Mariota or whoever.
You surely can't run with
Carr.
You surely can't roll with Drew Lock for a year.
No, I mean, look, they should get Drew Lock in return. He's got 1 year left on his contract. He's a backup.
You're drafting a rookie. You're throwing him right in there.
Yeah.
You're saying good luck, sir.
And I'm interested in Malik Willis at 9 for them. And then whoever else they like, if they don't take somebody at 9, whoever else they take in the second round.
Or if Willis is gone at 9.
Seattle has always made some of the most fascinating, I'm saying that in a very nice term, fascinating first round picks. LJ Collier and Rashad Penny, and even when Bruce Irvin was picked in 2012, like zero people at the time had Bruce Irvin going in the first round. Seattle always, you know, picks a unique player in the first round. So we get to see that again. They have a first round pick again, and it's at 9. So which quarterback do they love, or is there another position? If they go somewhere else, the corners for them as well, just because that fits a huge need. They don't rush the passer very well still. I mean, this really sounds like our Panthers breakdown.
Yeah.
They don't have a lot.
I mean, this was right a team now that was letting down. Like, the roster overall was bad enough that Russell Wilson couldn't drag this team where it needed to go.
Yeah.
Now they don't have Russell Wilson, so they just have a bad roster.
And if you embrace the full rebuild here, you probably put Tyler Lockett on the market and then figure out how to lock up DK. That's my feeling. Or you trade both of them and just get younger. I don't know. We're supposed to fix them, though. How are we fixing them? Malik Willis at 9.
Okay.
Building around Malik.
Didn't you drink No, you didn't give him to the Lions at 2.
I did not give him to the Lions. You're telling me the Lions are going to take him at 2. I'm not buying that.
A lot of buzz. Buzz. Talk.
You're going by the buzz.
A lot of people saying it.
What are we doing on the offensive line now from Malik Willis?
We need a complete offensive line. Where are we getting one from?
If we take Malik Willis at 9, you got picks 41 and 42. There's probably a lineman to take at 41 or 42.
There's probably a couple.
Depth-wise.
That's not a bad place for offensive linemen.
You go tackle and corner there.
Or tackle and guard. I mean,
tackle, guard, yeah.
They're another one of these teams that's in that marketplace for all of those viable starting offensive linemen in free agency, right? The Ben Jones of the world.
Connor Williams.
Yeah, the Andrew Norwells, Alex Kappas, Brian Allen, like Bozeman if he makes it past, if the Ravens let him hit free agency. Like, these are the players that can come in and fill a job for a while.
It's got to be guys that you're investing in for multiple years. You want hopefully younger players because, again, this is rebuild time in Seattle, man.
And the terrifying thing is, like, this is not a position they've been able to fix for, like, a decade.
Yeah. So do something different. Go full George Costanza. Do the complete opposite of what your mind is telling you to do. Just do the opposite of what you've done, other than the Dwayne Brown move. Save the offensive line for
that
a couple
worked.
Years. So we're just – the other thing you can do is take these 8 picks. So if you don't love a QB, back to this trade-down strategy – 9 could be a sweet spot where the Steelers, if they want Malik Willis, want to come up and get him or whatever. If
9's a potential trade place. Like, 2 wasn't. I don't think
Pete Carroll wasn't so
2.
Old, we would just say, look, they're in complete rebuild mode. Just punt. So it is this weird dynamic, right, where it's like, does he really want to go through this whole thing?
I mean, they don't have a choice, right? Like, whatever about the Russell Wilson thing. The point where you immediately just drop kick Bobby Wagner out of there because he's
it's
$16
done.
Million. That's a rebuild, right? Whatever about, like, again, you can, the Kirk Cousins Minnesota thing, that should be a rebuild, but apparently it isn't. So I think if you got rid of Russell Wilson, you had some kind of plan for a quarterback, you could convince people this wasn't a rebuild. But where you get rid of Bobby Wagner just because he costs a lot, and it's not like you were right up against the wall in the salary cap, immediately that's like, no, this is being torn down here.
We are reminded in the YouTube channel that the Seahawks have a ton of cap space. They're the top NFC team by a mile,
right,
as far as cap space goes.
So that's what I'm saying. At the point where you're getting rid of Bobby Wagner for cap space when you already had a ton of cap space, it's because the whole thing is being ripped to pieces. Like, we are coming down to the foundations here and building it back up.
But are you using that money to win now? Like, in 2013, they added Cliff Avril. It was awesome, right? They added the two top edge defenders on our free agent board, Cliff Avril and Michael Bennett. And that helped put him over the top, one of the best defenses of all time.
Uh-huh.
Are you getting win now guys, or is it all guys that have to, you know, to win 23 and 24?
But I think you can do a bit of both. Like, there's no reason that the Seahawks can't bring in a guy like Brandon Scherff, right? Which would be monster money. Who's 30 years old, so it's not like he's young, but 30 years old in today's NFL for an offensive lineman, he can have a full 5-year contract and be good.
That's more attractive if Russell Wilson's your quarterback.
Of course it
is. You don't have that type of
cap space without him. But you still need to fix the offensive line. Like, if you're planning on drafting a rookie at 9, that guy needs something in front of him. This is like the Bears discussion, right? You need to put something in front of the guy to give him any kind of chance. So go out there and spend on offensive line. Bring in Brandon Scherff. Bring in Lakeland Tomlinson. Like, maybe you can steal from the division as well.
Reunite with Mark Lewinsky.
Yeah. That's the plan.
Because the old Seattle strategy of getting the great athlete who doesn't develop for 5 years but after he leaves your team.
You should re-sign all those players. George Fant is actually quite good now.
Yes. All the players.
We'll trade for George Fant.
The great athletes that you drafted that didn't develop within the 4 years that you had them.
Yeah. Now they're all good for somebody else.
Bring back George Fant, Mark Lewinsky. The dude from Buffalo that had the great spark score. He's probably good now somewhere.
Okay.
In the XFL or something. Quentin Spain, get him over there. Bring in Cornelius Lucas to play swing.
George Fant played almost 900 snaps last year and allowed just 18 pressures.
Yeah, he was much better. Much improved.
75 pass blocking grade. Like, this is the player the Seahawks wanted when they played him, and instead he had a 42 grade for them.
But that was part of their miscalculation this entire time, was taking players like George Fant and saying, here, basketball player, go protect Russell Wilson's blind side while we teach you how to play football.
Didn't go well.
It didn't. But they were right. I mean, they were onto something. They found these great athletes who take 4 or 5 years to develop. You just don't get the payoff. Another team does. Anyway, unless you get comp picks out of them. That was the grand strategy.
No.
Anyway, what else are we doing here in Seattle?
I mean, as I say,
41 and 42. You could double up on offensive line. Nine, I still want to trade down as much as possible and just add to the entire team.
You're definitely taking a quarterback in the first round.
Yeah, find a QB you like.
Okay.
I'd trade down at the back end of the first round, take Desmond Ridder.
All right.
Trade down as much as possible. Ridder, multiple offensive linemen, corner.
Who's this year's Matt Flynn, who had a great game that we can project into a into a monster contract?
Colt McCoy had a great game.
Colt McCoy.
Colt McCoy beat Seattle with the Giants 2 years ago.
Colt McCoy, he did.
Right? You get that, like, I saw him play scouting?
Yeah.
Colt McCoy came in here, balled out.
All right.
In front of the 12s.
I could see
Pete's press conference. I mean, Colt McCoy came in here and balled out. 12s were fired out. Now, the 12s weren't even there because it was 2020. 12s were at home yelling at their TV, and Colt McCoy is doing it against us. We're bringing him in.
So, January the 1st, 2012, Matt Flynn started the final game of the season against the Detroit Lions.
Six.
Threw for 480 yards and six touchdowns in a 45-41 victory. How much money do you think that earned him from the Seattle Seahawks?
It was like a $25 million deal or something.
It was a three-year deal worth $20.5 million, nine of which was guaranteed. So he got $9 million from one game.
Yeah, more than that, really, because he was on the roster.
Right. Yeah. But, like, guaranteed $9 million from one game.
Yeah. That's right.
So, Colt McCoy? We're giving Colt. There's got to be, like,
plus,
one
like,
random...
when Pete was in college, Colt McCoy's, like, tearing it up, you know.
That's true. Yeah.
Did he recruit him?
Did he take down USC?
He didn't. He did not have that opportunity. He would have, though. You just know he would.
But who's, like, the young... There's got to be one young quarterback that, like, lit it up last season for, like, half a game.
Taylor Heineke?
He had too much bad play. Like C.J. Beathard, number one graded quarterback in the NFL based off two snaps.
Beathard, they definitely saw him at San Francisco. He probably made a good pass against him once.
There's really not much, unfortunately, in the offing here.
You bring back Geno.
Bring back Geno.
Geno Smith's a free agent.
Maybe they can tempt the
Texans. Has Josh Johnson ever been a Seahawk?
Probably. Right? He's been everywhere else.
Chances are. Yeah. Chances are he has.
Maybe they can tempt the Texans into parting with Davis Mills.
There you go. Are they in the Jameis sweepstakes?
God.
Seattle. How come your answer to Jameis is like happy for some teams and disgusted for others?
Because it's just like it's an admission of like the state of hopelessness you're in right now. It's like if Jameis Winston is actually the thing,
I know
the answer, it's like, ugh.
I know who Pete wants.
Yeah.
I know who he wants. Gardner Minshew.
Oh, wow. Josh Johnson has, in fact, not been a Seattle Seahawk so far.
So he's due. So we're going to bring in Gardner Minshew and Josh Johnson. That's our QB room.
One of the few teams that he has not played for.
That's our QB room. Felipe Franks. Get him in there, too.
He's played with the San Francisco 49ers three different times, but not the Seahawks.
Not actually on the football field, though, I don't think.
I mean, look, details.
Seattle, we've given you some options.
None of which are good.
I don't know. This is embrace the rebuild, Seahawks fans. And I'm interested to see it. I'd bring in Minshew, though.
The good news is there's no Matt Flynn for you to burn $9 million on, or whatever $9 million adjusted
for
inflation is.
You could burn plenty of money on Minshew. Minshew. We've run our course here.
Yeah, we're done.
Are we exactly at 2 hours? We started late. Uh-oh.
Not that late. Come on. It was a couple minutes.
We're waiting for you. 2 hours ago, we started. We appreciate everybody for tuning in. A couple things to remember. The screenshot, I already have them coming in. So, look at this. Rob Sasso, he might win. Screenshot, if you subscribe to the Daily and the PFF NFL podcast. If you don't subscribe to the Daily, then you would have to go ahead and subscribe to it. Which, by the way, you know, it's great. Well, it's only 10 minutes of us. It's not long form. It's the quick-hitting 10-minute version of Sam and Steve. And so we appreciate you doing that. And then 25% off, we'll give that back to you off the any PFF subscription using the promo code NFLPOD. And then don't forget my pinned tweet at @PFF_Steve, Sam's pinned tweet at @PFF_Sam for our charity drive. Appreciate everybody for tuning in. Next week, free agency. It's happening. They'll be tampering legally. I mean, we saw illegal tampering last week. The legal tampering starts this weekend. Free agency next week. We'll be previewing it, reviewing, talking about all the news. So stick with us throughout the entire offseason. It's team building season here on the PFF NFL podcast.
And now we're going to play out with the beautiful tribute to the
great. Oh, it's tribute time. Are we fired up over there? We got Villanueva tribute time?
The great Alejandro Villanueva.
I was nervous about this. I knew this day would come at some point.
It had to. At some point. All great things come to an end.
Are we ready to go?
So it is with the great career of Alejandro.
Let's throw it to Alejandro Villanueva, the great Alejandro Villanueva. Thank you for a great career.